Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Last show before a road trip, so by all means, gang, let's make this a good one. It's Friday the 13th, but we're not the least bit scared of that. Granted, I wish there wasn't a black cat walking around in front of my path here and I wasn't sitting under this ladder, but I'm not the least bit superstitious, and I won't worry about the crack in the floor that I keep rolling back and forth across because we're rational people. Friday the 13th is only a bad luck day if you happen to be a member of the Knights Templars in the 14th century of the Common Era. So are we clear on that? Yeah. No, it's going to be a great evening. It's going to be a wonderful evening. And as noted, I'm going to be gone Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday and driving home on Thursday. Hopefully there will be a Thursday show, but if there's not, sorry. It just meant that it took a little longer getting back down the trail home. A reminder or a program note, we will have a Dr. Bill O'Brien, Professor Keith Lilly, PRISM, PRISM, American History Chat tomorrow. That will go out over the Horn stream. And if you will search at ustream.tv, you will find, if you search PRISM, PRISM, you'll find the video stream as well. Looking forward to that in a big way. That'll go from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, live from the Irma Bird Center and the Beckley, West Virginia campus of Concord University. 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific. Lots of discussion of magnificent discussions of history you didn't know you didn't know. The PRISM West Virginia American History Series, available only on the Horn. It is the 13th of April. That means we're 2 days from the midway mark of April, and you'll find that the midway mark of April happens to be Sunday, so we kind of got to get this taken care of now and going into next week. We are, at present, $257 away from making our halfway mark. That's kind of where we need to be by Monday, and then Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday I'm gone and hope to be back on Thursday. But $257 is what we need to raise in order to keep up with fundraising between now and midnight on Sunday. So just a general genial reminder there. Because remember, we're trying to beat the Swede. Our good buddy Scott in Sweden has offered $100 extra if we can match the monthly fundraising goal, which would be really, really nice. So $257 will get us to the halfway point for April and have us well on the way, or at least halfway, to beating the Swede this evening. It is freaking gorgeous here. So it's nice to be back into that part of the calendar year where Friday on the front porch means something. You know, the galoshes, hopefully, are finally put away for the final time. It's warm outside and sunny, and one of these days, we're going to set it up so we can do Friday on the front porch, really, in an outside kind of beautiful situation. But as it is, wander on up to the porch, kick the dirt and dust off your boots. Grab an ice-cold glass of sweet tea. Lemon is available in wedges in the bowl next to it. Or if you prefer, you can just take a good long pull on that that their cider jug. We call it cider around here. W.C. Fields called it Nanny Goat's Milk. It's very sweet. Just to pull the stopper out and take a good pull and kick back and relax, because I got a feeling we got a lot to get into this evening. I got one right off the bat that I just, oh, Lordy, I got to share. We got an email from Kellum, and, you know, I usually refer to it as Mississippi Stan. Kellum is blowing right past Mississippi Stan and just signs off the email as Kellum in Mississippi. So, and this email actually came in yesterday evening, too late for me to get to in the course and scope of the show. But, you know, we were talking about that little Kleenex box cover that we need to be selling to the fundies, the one that says Jesus is coming. I really want that to happen. So I get this note from Kellum in Mississippi Stan. In light of yesterday's prayer meeting, I wanted to tell you of the new billboards that are popping up all over Mississippi. Now, I'm going to take a digression. I think I've told you about this before, but it sits before me every evening during the broadcast, so it's always there to be an inspiration to me. A dear friend of the program, by the name of Lee, worked for a company that did printing jobs, did novelties and stuff like that, and this was an overrun that got sent along to me. Because, you know, you have to run a couple of tests before you find out if you can run the whole batch. It's for the Cornerstone Community Church at 6639 St. Mary's Road at Floyd's Knobs, Indiana, 47119. I'm guessing it's some sort of low-rent megachurch or whatever, maybe a high-rent megachurch. The Cornerstone Community Church. And the message on the back of the cup says, "Need field up? Worship time, Sunday at 10:30 a.m., Wednesday at 6:30, meal provided." And you think I was kidding about the kitchen down in the fellowship hall. Need field up? Just go to the Cornerstone Community Church of Floyd's Knobs, Indiana. Well, and I mention that because this is sort of in the same vein. Like I said, I've suggested that we need a Kleenex box cover that says Jesus is coming, and the fundies will snap it up and they'll never know that the joke's on them. Well, Kellum wrote in last evening. Kellum said, "In light of yesterday's prayer meeting, I wanted to tell you the new billboards that are popping up all over Mississippi. Picture this, 20-foot billboards with a shining backlight. They only have one extremely large question." And this also is a back reference to graphic work that Lucas had sent in and mentioned as well. They only have one extremely large question. Great big bold letters. "Is he in you?" Question mark. Kellum says, "I bust out in hysterical laughs every time I pass them. They're so subliminal. I wonder if batshit crazy I'm hot for Jesus Michelle Bachman or her telehubby," oh, that's a fun word, "came up with this one. I'll try to send a pic soon," and that is in the works. I've since seen a pic, I think Jurassic Pork, was it, maybe, that put one up on my Facebook page. "Is he in you?" And then this intriguing postscript to the message. "P.S. I'm a sower, and I'm going to take you up on the tissue holder challenge. Expect it soon. Oh, Lordy. It will be a wonderful thing." Many thanks to Ray and Kim for getting us started this evening, along with our dear friend Jug of Punch. And we are now only $237 out. So I have a feeling we're going to be able to make it halfway to the halfway point in April by the end of the program. I feel it, brethren and sistren. Oh, wow. Okay, so if you go into the if you go into the chat room, headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, there's a link kindly provided by Jug-a-Punch to a blog post. Is he in you? And apparently it's a website, too. Isheinyou.com. The blogger here at Angel Speak asking, do the owners of Billboard Ministries or those who run the isheinyou.com website, oh yes, that's the actual name of the site, have a wickedly sharp sense of humor, or are they just clueless? And who, pray tell, is the intended audience for this message? Good question. I think they're just clueless as all day long. Now, see, I'd like to see somebody, maybe the Trojan Company, put up a billboard, maybe 100 yards down the road, saying, "Well, if he is, you need us." Oh, but why spoil the fun, right? So, I mean, if that doesn't just get the juices going for a good rousing Friday on the front porch. Well, frankly, I just don't know what does. By the way, back reference to, what was it? Was it last Friday when I was talking about finding out what a bunch of freaks I had accidentally run across there in Manassas, Virginia? Because we got a note from our good buddy Tosh, Bob. Oh, brother! What kind of misbegotten misinterpretation have the Aryan National Fundies come up with this time? 2 Samuel 7:10 is part of a message from God to King David saying his people, the Israelites, will have peace in a land that God has given them through David. No longer will others be able to oppress them. If you read Joshua carefully, you will notice that the invading armies of Israelites don't have chariots and are constrained to living in the hillier areas. That's part of the reason they made truces with some of the previous inhabitants. They had plentiful armies, but were unable to construct their own war chariots and were therefore able to defeat the locals who had wheels. Unable. Apparently, in all the battles and destruction they wrought on their way into the Promised Land after the 40 years spent in the desert, they never managed to face or keep any war chariots either. Talented bunch. Thanks, Tosh. Oh, God. Yeah, I still think back about that. My erstwhile buddy, what was his name? Vincent Imperial. I will never do another good deed in a hotel parking lot ever, ever again. 13.5 minutes after the hour, and wow. Just to give you a sense of where maybe Friday on the front porch will take us. Let's see here. Yeah. We had an NRA convention speech given thing today. Willard and Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, Chuck Kider, and amateur paleontologist gave a speech, and it's just too precious not to get into. But as a sidelight to that, a story coming out of Brooklyn, Ohio. Yeah, I didn't know there was one either. Wrong Brooklyn, as our buddy Brandon would be more than happy to inform us. An Ohio father opened fire on his family inside a Cracker Barrel restaurant Thursday evening, killing his daughter on her birthday and his wife, who told him she was leaving him. Police then shot and killed the 51-year-old man after he walked outside the restaurant and refused to surrender. He blew away his 42-year-old wife and their 10-year-old daughter, also wounded the couple's 10-year-old other daughter. She's in critical condition. This at the same time as Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist and check kiter. Well, we'll do that story later. Remind me to get back to that, please. Oh, there's a bunch. It's a busy night. But it is Friday on the front porch, so let us not shilly-shally about, and rather instead, with the sunlight in our faces, let us go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, you are so bad.
Well, which part? I didn't put the billboard up, Jim. Now, don't you be acting like I did.
I didn't say you did. I make no accusations, but I said you are so bad sometimes, Jim.
And the Kleenex box cover? Yeah, they'll snap them up as quick as we can get them made. You know that.
And for me to say something like that, that's the pot calling the kettle beige.
Indeed. Taupe.
Starting off with my lead story.
Eggshell.
About the police officer.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's just put it this way. When the God of Irony hands you your San Francisco Police Department badge, and it's badge number 69, fun things are going to happen.
Was it in San Francisco? I didn't catch where it was located.
I thought it was.
I don't know. It could be. That was just something else. It was just a Facebook page that I sent you from a friend of mine in San Francisco with a song on it. I thought you might like to play, but that's if you still have it, you can hit on the link whenever you get a chance. But I was listening to IMUS this morning, and Bernard Begert has what he calls a Bernie briefing, which basically gives a lowdown on all kinds of people. And apparently, this police officer was, how can I put it delicately, pleasuring...
I don't think you can.
He was pleasuring himself, okay?
You mean he was dealing out a playing canasta or something? Or
No, he was basically spanking his monkey.
Well, you know, some cop cars carry dogs. I didn't know that they'd moved up to monkeys as well.
No, I mean, this guy was, he was sitting in his radio car, and he had some type of picture of some nude woman or something like that. And so he had decided to take matters into his own hands. How can we put it that way? That's as good a way as a way I know how to put it.
You know, and it's probably all a reality show set up for Car 69, Where Are You?
Well, it could be. But nonetheless, the whole thing was captured by his dash cam and also the voice recording of what he was doing. And you could hear this guy just, you know, making all these grunting and groaning noises as he got into his manipulation. And I got back to the station, and the chief was interviewed, and he said he just couldn't understand how somebody like that could pass police screening, who would be that crazy to sit in a radio car with a dash cam viewing everything he did. I guess the guy was sitting there with his pants down or something, but that's the damnedest thing I've ever heard in my life.
You know, he was maybe the donuts weren't ready.
I guess not. I mean, if he had some, he'd probably use them for something else besides eating it. My Lord.
Yeah, see, there's no winning with this story, Jim. I hope you realize that.
Not a whole lot of winning with this, but I mean, that's just the craziest damn thing I've ever heard of in my life. And you were talking about the NRA. They had a big meeting somewhere. Was it St. Louis or someplace like that?
Yeah, I've got it here.
They want to extend the right of being able to shoot somebody in your own home to the outer perimeters of your property, like your swimming pool, your front yard, basically. I guess if you cross off a sidewalk.
Look, I mean, I mentioned that horrible, horrible, horrible story out of Ohio, Brooklyn, Ohio, Jim. You know why that guy was able to blow away his family in the Cracker Barrel? Because the NRA, backed by a bunch of godforsaken Republicans and conservatives and defenders of the Second Amendment and all of our Merkin liberties, insisted that Ohio pass a law, and you may remember us talking about it, that Ohio pass a law wherein one is able to take one's firearm to the baseball game or the football game.
Yeah, I remember something about that.
And if that includes, you know, if you can do that, well, it also includes taking your peacemaker to the Cracker Barrel. What? No hash brown casserole? Dance.
Yeah, it's really sad that this country has gotten into that Dodge City type of mentality. And that's precisely what it is, where everybody was, you know, armed and, you know, people were just shot down in the street or in a bar or whatever over the fact that someone didn't like the way some guy looked or whatever. Or...
John Wesley Hardin was so mean he once shot a man for snoring.
Yeah, or poker games and stuff like that, you know, when somebody thought somebody was cheating. I mean, you've seen all the Westerns on TV and stuff like that, and how they, you know, quit Draw McGraw and all this crap. And, you know, it's just, it's really making this country an American battlefield within its borders. It really
is. And bear in mind, Jim, that that's precisely what they want it to be.
Well, it would appear so. And
well, I mean, let's take just a minute here, if you don't mind.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you actually heard Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist and check kiter.
Yeah, I heard him explain the check kiting business. You'll love this.
Oh, no, do tell.
Well, he said the check had been made good, and it was the initial bad check was drawn on a closed account, so they had to reissue the check to the state of Utah?
Yes.
And that's what had been done. But, I mean, you know, when he was answering Wolf Blitzer last night on TV about it, he had this shitting grin on his face. And to tell you the truth, I didn't believe the guy. I didn't believe a word he was saying. But, I mean, he just, Wolf Blitzer asked him, point out, he said, is it true that you're bouncing checks? And
Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist.
Call him Dr. Gangrene.
Yeah, there you go.
Dr. Gangrene, he just basically just, he was taken aback. You could tell that, and he had to gin up one real quick. And to tell you the truth, I don't believe what he said, but, you know, please pray continue about this.
Well, when you're writing checks on closed accounts, that really is check kiting now, isn't it, Jim?
Well, of course it is. As a matter of fact, it's much more serious if the check is taken to a magistrate than it is on once it's just bounced. Because if you write a check on a closed account, that means that you had knowledge of the fact that that check was no good by deliberate intention. Whereas if you maybe mistake your arithmetic or whatever, or, you know, people have, it's happened, it hasn't happened to me in over 15 years, and I thank God it hasn't. But I mean, you know, if you should write a check because you haven't gotten your bank balance properly figured, that's one thing. But you go before a magistrate on a closed account check, I mean, that's a very serious thing. As a matter of fact, the merchant will not even bother to send it back through, and most of the times, if they even contact you as a courtesy, they'll just send it directly to a magistrate for collection, and you'll have to go down there and pay a fine, and then, of course, you know, make restitution to the bank and or the merchant or whomever. And so,
well, you know, you have to wonder if they that was probably, oh, I'm sure this was just a big misunderstanding, Dr. Gingrich.
Oh, yeah.
But then again, out there in Utah, I mean, they've already got their candidate, and I'm sure they're just trying to embarrass him because Newt got a little paranoid the other day. He said that Radio Rwanda, Fox News, he said Fox is just biased and they're completely in the tank for Romney.
Is that so?
Yeah. And now, bear in mind, he worked for him up until a few months back.
You know, Fox is not a real stable employer because I understand that all Fox employees basically have no recourse whatsoever. They have no redress. They have no type of position protection there. You could be there one day and gone the next because they let some guy go yesterday who'd been with them for over 8 years, and apparently he had spoken out of school or said some things that he shouldn't, and he was gone. I mean, I'm sure they probably had security walk into his desk and clear it out before lunchtime of the day he reported to work when they found out he was a suspect.
Well, I have no doubt. Well, let us share Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, remarks before the NRA. Now, bear in mind, his remarks come on the heels of, like we said, a man blowing away his wife and daughter and trying to kill his other 10-year-old daughter in Ohio because, you know, carrying guns into restaurants is a top-notch idea. And it also comes on the heels of course, the Trayvon Martin shooting, the murder of Trayvon Martin. So let's just kind of keep that in the back of our minds as we listen to Dr. Gingrich as he addresses the freedom defenders over there to the NRA, okay?
Oh, yeah. Proceed with vigor.
I shall. Thank you, Jim.
Now, many of you know that I like Wayne very much. I like your board. I know almost all of your board members. So I hope none of them will take it personally when I say that I believe the NRA has been too timid. And I want to explain what I mean. A Gingrich presidency will submit to the United Nations a treaty that extends the right to bear arms as a human right for every person on the planet, because every person on the planet deserves the right to defend themselves from those who would oppress them, exploit them, rape them, or kill them.
Now, you got that, Jim? We're not done yet. But having a gun is more of a basic human right than access to potable water, access to food, access to shelter. I missed that part of Dr. Maslow's paper where he included guns in the basics essentials of human survival. Did you as well?
Yeah, I did too. I've never seen that in Maslow's pyramid or hierarchy of needs. Never.
Right. Well, it only gets more fun. Listen to him clap. Do you reckon it occurs to those clapping idiots, Jim, that all those people he wants to give guns to? Because if they had turned the camera around, it would have been hard to avoid noting that the vast majority of that crowd was, shall we say, white. Did it occur to them that Newt is advocating giving the whole world guns, and most of them aren't?
Oh yeah. I guess that's what he's doing.
Yeah, I think they'll stop clapping as soon as they figure that out.
Well, I mean, these people I don't think they're going to score very highly on any type of intelligence test or anything like that. And, you know, basically, I'm just looking through a glass darkly at a bunch of illiterate Southern, or even, no, not Southern, but just illiterate rednecks who think that the only means of conflict resolution has to proceed out of the barrel of a gun, and that is indeed very sad. As a matter of fact, if they believe in it so much, I wish they would all get in a gigantic circle and have a circular firing squad with the Gingrich in the middle.
As long as we had some sort of Kevlar bulletproof shield surrounding them.
Well, I mean, these people are just... I don't know why this, you know, I remember back in the 60s when they were having a lot of riots and stuff like that, and there was a lot of gunplay in the streets, but that kind of died down a little bit. And even back in those days, this was back in the turbulent 60s of civil rights and Watts and places like that, and different parts of Washington and Anacostia. You know, it was referred to as Dodge City, and how the violence was deplored, and you didn't hear this kind of comeuppance like you just played with the NRA and Dr. Gangrene, you know, preaching his doctrine for everybody to have some type of weapon. I mean, that's just unheard of, and the people clapping, I mean, I haven't heard that much clapping since I've seen some old World War II films with Hitler addressing his rallies, you know?
There you go. Well, we're not done. Stand by.
It is not enough to be against the small arms treaty that keeps us psychologically on defense. The time has come to win the following proposition. Far fewer women would be raped, far fewer children would be killed,
irony,
far fewer towns would be destroyed if people everywhere on the planet had the right to bear arms, and far fewer dictators would survive if people had the right to bear arms everywhere on the planet.
Just curious, Jim, and there's a little bit more, but just curious, am I mistaken, or do I recall seeing images from teabagging rallies and so forth in which they have showed images of President Obama dressed up as the Nazi dictator, as Osama bin Laden, yada yada, you know, dictators?
Yeah.
I mean, do you get the dog whistling that's going on here?
Yeah, I do.
It's just like that Freese freak yesterday who said that he hopes President Obama's teleprompters are bulletproof. They're getting closer and closer to saying what they really want. This is a dangerous lot out there, Jim.
Well, I believe they are, absolutely.
And there's just one more, and so now fewer children would be killed. You heard that, right?
Oh, I heard that. I heard the other thing, too. I mean, it's absolutely fatuous and ridiculous.
So if only we're all walking around armed to the teeth, we can just shoot it out in the street instead of... And you can... Right. If only Trayvon had a gun, right?
Yeah. If only Trayvon had a gun.
I don't think it would have made any difference. If Trayvon had a gun, George Zimmerman would have emptied the clip. Because that's the one thing. Maybe I just haven't noticed it. But how many has anyone reported how many rounds George Zimmerman fired into the body of Trayvon Martin, or how many he fired generally? We don't know how many.
I think they're pretty much fleecing. If I'm not mistaken, they're trying to keep all that close hand, and they're trying to. You know, that's one of the things that the Florida DA is. Said they would not discuss, and you know, the particular details of the crime. So I don't know. They may have, but if they have, I haven't heard it, and I haven't heard anybody mention it in any television or radio information.
I think I can't help. I remember running the audio in some of the 911 audio. Aren't there like two shots heard?
I believe one lady who had called in said she only heard one shot fired. Now, there could have been another, but there were several calls to 911 that I heard. The first was, of course, Zimmerman's, and then, of course, there was a lady who called in who apparently lived in close proximity, and they asked her how many shots were fired, and she said one. They were very specific in questioning her about that. I did hear that. That's the only one I've heard, Bob. There could be more. I don't know.
Well, there is just a little bit more of Dr. Gangrene's commentary here.
This isn't funny, but I mean, it's very disheartening.
There's about 40 seconds left, and some of it's the very best.
Let's take the George Soros's and the Hillary Clintons head on. They represent a world in which elites disarm the rest of us, so we are then helpless when elites turn sour and when evil reappears.
You got that? You bounce one check, and you're no longer a member of the elite. Is there anybody out there? I don't know about the little mouth-breathing knuckle walkers sitting there in their folding chairs listening to him talk. But when you've got a credit line of $500,000 at Tiffany's, doesn't it just ring a little bit? Isn't it a little tinny when you start talking about other people being elites, Jim?
Oh yeah, isn't it so? I mean, this guy is a walking colonoscopy. I mean, he's basically, and I don't mean to be vulgar here, but when I think of him, I think of him walking around with his head so far up his ass that he is a walking colonoscopy.
I'm surprised it doesn't just flow right out of his mouth, but it kind of does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, he is basically 30 pounds of shit in a 15-pound bag.
You know, here in the hills, there's a word for that. We call that a blivet. Yeah, it's spelled B-L-I-V-E-T. He is a blivet.
Oh, I thought a blivet was a person who thought they were a roll of toilet paper. I'm sorry.
I was told that a blivet was the 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound onion bag.
Well, you know, all that being put aside, this guy is just he's one of the most reprehensible human beings in the country.
You know, he is, and when you're sitting there in front of a bunch of people with guns, although it's interesting, I don't think they were allowed to bring their guns into the auditorium. Don't know why the NRA would want to do that. But when you're mentioning people by name, and you say, let's take the George Soros's and Hillary Clinton's head on, and you're saying it to the assembled faithful of the National Rifle Association, aren't you basically inciting them to do gun violence against George Soros and Hillary Clinton? I mean, because that's what it sounded like to me, Jim.
It's inciting to riot, and you know, basically, that's definitely against the law. I mean, that's exactly what he's doing, in my opinion.
Well, let's see if he's got anything more in the next...
I mean, there's nothing even subliminal in what he's saying.
In the next 20 seconds or so.
We represent a world in which we trust in the basic decency of millions of people, and we believe they can, in fact, protect themselves, and they can be armed with safety because they are in charge of their life, because God has made them sovereign, not government.
See, George Zimmerman was sovereign, not Trayvon Martin. And God made George Zimmerman sovereign, not Trayvon Martin.
Yeah, I guess he did, or somebody did, because he made George Zimmerman, or George Zimmerman made himself judge, jury, and executioner of an innocent teenager, black, because he had a hood. And I think at the time when the boy was shot, he was talking to his girlfriend on a cell phone. He was. I've heard that.
Are they that? I mean,
are they that fucked up? Yeah, they are that fucked up. And I don't want to really use that word, but I mean that's the only word I need to describe it. They're just that crazy.
It's breathtaking.
Yeah, it is. And I, you know, with this country being so polarized.
Of course, you don't want anybody there standing up and doing an Occupy mic check or something, because they will shoot you down in cold blood for exercising freedom of speech.
If they don't like what you're, if they don't like what they hear, they seem to think they have a right to take it into their own hands to kill you. And that's basically what the purpose of a gun is. I mean, it is a machine for throwing bullets, and these bullets are not meant to do anything but to stop life. That's it, period.
Of some form or another, especially where, and I do, I draw a distinction between so-called long guns, your rifles, your shotguns, and handguns. I don't think it's improper to draw that distinction. Do you, Jim?
Well, I guess not, no. I mean, I've handled every kind of weapon there is, and to tell you the truth, having handled so many in such situations, excuse me, I don't have any fond memories of having to use them.
No, I mean, I know how to handle them. I've been trained in it and everything. I know how to take care of them, clean them, yada, yada, yada. But I have never laid my hands upon a firearm with any sort of glee or excitement or, hoo-wee, would you just look at this? It's always been a sort of odd horror.
Well, it's basically I was trained, I'm sure you were, that the first word that comes into the handling of any firearm is one of respect. I mean, my father taught me at a very early age, and I grew up in gun country in South Carolina, that you didn't even take an empty piece of pipe and point it at anybody, or that he wouldn't. And he said, don't point anything at anybody. He said, that's just a good rule of thumb to remember.
You know, when I was a little boy, and that was back in the mid to late 60s, yeah, there was nothing unusual in playing cowboys.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, that's a Buzzard's Gulch and all this kinds of stuff.
Right. And of course, that comes with having toy pistols, you know, six guns.
Oh, yeah.
But early on, I was taught, don't point that at anybody. Even though it's just a cap gun, don't point that at anybody.
Well, I just said, not even a hollow piece of tubing.
And, you know, one of the things that occurred to me is, well, if I've got a toy gun and I can't point it at anybody, there's not a hell of a lot of fun in having a toy gun, so we moved on to playing Batman and Robin. And
yeah, we kind of got out of that stage. I remember the one and only time my father took me on a deer drive. It was at Boykin, South Carolina, which is about 15 below miles below Camden and 12 above Sumter, South Carolina. And it was on Whit Boykin's plantation. He was a good friend of his. And I was about 13 or 14. And anyway, we went down to the deer drive, and I told him, I said, look, I'm not going to shoot anything. I'm not going to shoot, but I said, I'll go with you, father-son type thing. He said, well, okay. Bob, when we got down there, all those guys were down there blind, running drunk.
Oh, I have no doubt whatsoever.
And they weren't using shotguns. They were using high-powered Winchester 70s with exploding bullets, dum-dums, and stuff like that. And it was like being in a war zone. And, you know, the guy in the stand with us had a pint of Jim Beam, and he was firing at everything. And so my dad said, well, I think it's time for us to go. He said, this is just too dangerous for me and my son. And so...
You've told a number of stories of your father. He must have been a profoundly good and decent man, Jim.
One of the most decent Christian men who ever lived. You know, I'll say this about him. Instead of going to church on Sunday mornings, what he did was to take his Bibles and stuff like that, Gideon Bibles, and he went to a prison. And he believed in trying to spread Christianity as he perceived it to the people who needed it the most, and not sitting, you know, in a church where the main thing was to look and see who was wearing what, or the latest gossip, or the latest business type things, because churches have been used for that. But that was his brand of religion. And he was a devout Christian. And, you know, that has not been lost on me. And I think you probably know that. And I have my own belief systems, and yours and I don't quite coincide, but we can still talk in a group.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Jesus didn't hang out with the well-to-do in the synagogue and the temple either, now, did he?
No. My father believed in the fact that the word you needed was the most was to either be in the prison or the hospital or in a situation where...
Well, there is a verse that covers all of that, isn't there?
Exactly. And these were not places where he did it to be seen or to beat his breast like the Pharisees in the marketplace, but did so in such a way that basically it was a matter of him entering into a closet and, you know, basically doing what he did and doing so for the, you know, in accord with the teachings of Christ as he understood them. And, you know, basically that's what I was taught. And luckily, I grew up in a church where we didn't have a lot of this crazy stuff that you mentioned that you know, that you were exposed to. And I guess that's the reason you have your own, you know, view of the world of that. And but basically, being one of God's chosen people, an Episcopalian.
I just love that phrase.
Well, that's what
the chosen frozen.
Or Whiskeypagans and stuff like that.
Whiskey-piscopals.
Yeah. If they want to call me a Whiskeypagan, that's fine. I mean, I'm going to have a drink right now.
By Jove, it's Friday on the front porch, Jim. If you didn't, I think I'd be offended.
Well, there you go. And the other thing, you know, as far as this gun thing, we were coming out of that deer drive. Now, this was in the middle of what they call Hellhole Swamp. And anyway...
Do they run dogs on them in South Carolina, Jim?
Well, the only dogs I've ever seen is basically on a fox hunt.
Okay, because I mean, you get down into South Alabama and the swampy ground down there, and it's legal to run dogs on deer. I mentioned that to some friends of mine around here who are right upstanding deer hunters, and they said, "That's not funny. That's sick."
It is sick. I would even do it. Like I say, I had the opportunity. You know, I grew up riding horses, and I love horses, and that's the reason I like polo. And I also grew up going, I've been on a couple hunts. And of course, it was a nice thing to hunt breakfast, and you know, it was very English and, you know, a proper thing to do. But I never went on a fox hunt. I would go on a drag hunt. And that's when they would take a piece of beef or something like that.
Yeah, and just let the dogs get the scent and chase it, and you chase the dogs.
I mean, what possible harm could that fox do? And I never was given the privilege of being bloodied with the blood of a fox. I never wanted to, and I just kind of got away from all that stuff because I saw enough of guns and stuff like that later on in my life. And, you know, but as far as horses are concerned, I always have a special place in my heart for them. For example, that movie War Horse, I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's a good movie, and I'm sure it's not pro-war. But getting back to this hunt that my dad and I went on, we came upon this guy still that he had out in the woods. And these cows had broken into the still and gotten into the mash.
Good God Almighty, you talk about La Vache qui rit.
Well, yeah, and the way we found out, we heard these sounds. And first, my dad said, God, has somebody been wounded? Are they? And these cows were on their backs. They had gotten into that mash. They
Jesus.
Were stuck as lords, and they were just...
Moo! Y'all moo!
Bulls, and there were others were just hanging over to one side, and, you know, about 5 or 10 of them had gotten into there. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life was to see those cows in that...
Now, that's one you don't forget.
No, you can't forget that, and...
That sounds like something out of a Gary Larson cartoon. You remember The Far Side, Jim?
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like something straight out of a Gary Larson cartoon.
I remember another time, just if we can have a few anecdotes here, if you don't mind.
Sure.
There were two Indian mounds on Mulberry Plantation, and the other one was Darrell Williams, who, you've heard of Mary Boykin Chestnut, Diary from Dixie.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Well, he was a collateral descendant, Mr. Williams was. And he and my dad were great friends, and he had a huge estate there. Mulberry's a beautiful plantation house, and it really looked very much like 12 Oaks and Gone with the Wind inside. Now, the exterior was brick, and it was, you know, Mulberry was just a beautiful place. And there were two Indian mounds there, and so we'd gone to dig in one of the mounds, and, of course, my dad and his friend, a guy named George Stewart, who later became a cartographer for National Geographic, they would get into the top of those mounds, and they wouldn't dig with shovels. They would dig with, you know, spoons and use sifters and toothbrushes and stuff like that. And my father had a tremendous Indian relic collection because they were ceremonial, not burial mounds. But to make a long story short, this friend of mine was with me, and he had a shotgun, and the fool discharged the shotgun into the ass of a wild female boar.
And then life got interesting.
That's when we got up a tree.
Knock him out, John.
Every day. And I can guarantee you one thing. Every bit of bark on that tree was stripped by that wild female boar because she had a litter of... She was, I guess, a big sow who had a piglets. And... You know, we had inadvertently wandered into her territory. I mean, those wild hogs like that.
You don't want nothing to do with them.
No, hell no. Absolutely. I mean, she took every bit of bark off that tree. I mean, it was a fairly big tree, too, because we were sitting up there for half a day. I mean, she was totally...
Oh, shit, half a day.
Yeah, we sure were, I'll tell you. Pretty soon, the idea of going out into the woods with a gun became sort of basically... Well, it wasn't exactly what...
Anathematic, perhaps?
Dad wanted to do. I mean, he carried a pistol with him in case it was a snake or something like that. And, you know, basically that was the end of that. But
well, some people carry a pistol. Some people carry a fifth of liquor. There's your dad with the pistol and W.C. Fields with the fifth of liquor.
Well, the two just don't mix. And there's one other thing tonight, and I'm not going to touch on this too heavily because we are coming up on the 100th anniversary of the RMS Titanic.
In a matter of hours, or perhaps right now.
Well, Bob, 100 years ago, there were people on this 2,200 people who had embarked upon the ship of dreams, and basically they were guided by the levers of power at the White Star Line. And 100 years ago tonight would have been the last full night the Titanic was afloat, and these people were all aboard. They were safe and warm in hopes of seeing loved ones, or in the steerage classes, the hope of a better world in 1912. And, you know, within 48 hours of making this declaration, all that grace and beauty, and not to mention 1,500 souls would be at the bottom of the North Atlantic. And I just thought to myself, oh, God, that sea is so great and our ships are so small. They really are. And that ship, when it sailed, there have been so many interesting comparisons between the Titanic and her sister ship, the Olympic. And the main difference was, now, the Olympic, of course, went down in 400 feet of water in the Aegean Sea, whereas the Titanic went down in 2.5 miles of water. And the cover-up, the White Star Line tried to make of that thing was just incredible. Because, I mean, they wanted it pictured that the Titanic was sank intact and she rested on the beauty and death as beautiful as she was in life as she rode the waves. But that was not the case. That ship was completely destroyed because of expansion joints and things of that nature. It literally broke apart between the second and third funnel. And when that happened, you know, that's basically what was right at the end. And, of course, you know, the two pieces separated, and I'm sure you've seen pictures of the thing when
Robert
discovered it on September 1st of 1985. And it's just incredible to think of, well, it was a well-built ship. Thomas Andrews did a good job. But, you know, he had advised the builders at Harland & Wolff that they should use 1.5-inch steel or 1.5-inch plating. Now, I'm not sure about the quality of steel because we didn't have a lot of specifications about that till 1948. But they said, no, we don't want to do that. We're going to make it out of 1-inch because if you do, she's going to be too heavy. And the ship was not welded. It was put together with 3 million rivets. And you can
good
imagine.
God.
3 million rivets, and that's how they literally willed her into being, with sledgehammers and white-hot rivets, and they had like four people who would be in the riveting process to put the ship together. And the plate, so basically it was held together by friction and not by any type of seal. And the Titanic was so long that they had to have this expansion joint in it, that it would, so when it rode the waves, it could do so evenly and with equipoise, because, I mean,
and not just snap in two.
Yeah, the ship was like four blocks long and was 11 stories high and grossed 46 or 44,000 gross tons. And, but that ship was prepared for just about anything except collision with an iceberg. And, the thing about it was, it's just incredible. The iceberg that Titanic hit had been a part of a snowfall of 10,000 years ago.
Yep.
And when it broke off, and of course, it's also, Robert Ballard and a number of people have decided that one of the reasons that the ship was so fatally damaged was the fact that instead of any gash, there was no real gash, it was a dot-dot-dot type of thing when it popped through the place, and boiler room 4 was not affected by the iceberg. But what happened when the Titanic went over the berg, it also grounded on the bottom, and it damaged the keel plates. And so when the water came into boiler room 4, and that was the key factor right there in that ship's demise, it was coming up from the bottom of the floor.
And when it hit the boilers?
Well, they had dampened the boilers, but, I mean, it was just coming up, and, you know, the boilers, they had drawn the fires as much as they possibly could. Now, there was also a talk of, you know, that when the Titanic sailed, there was a coal strike in England, and they had to get poor quality coal. And some of it in the coal bunkers, and this happened a lot on steamships, would, you know, spontaneously
combust. Yeah, it'd sit there and smolder.
Exactly.
One of the causes of the explosion of the main.
Yeah, exactly. And they were trying to dig that out, and they had a bunch of guys from sailing of day one, even before she took on passengers, that were trying to shovel, you know, that fire out. Whether they ever got it out, we don't know. But to make a long story short, it was basically, well, I hate to say this, but these people, and this lost their lives, and these people who died were the results of what I consider to be arrogance and hubris. And when you look at the disposition of the lifeboats, they could have, well, the lifeboats were so filled, at least on the port side, they were so filled that, or not filled, that 37 more people could have been in this boat, 27 in the next boat, to almost 300 people could have been displaced into the lifeboats, because each lifeboat held 75 people. And, of course, on the starboard side, Lightoller was in charge there, and he was a little more controlling about who got in and who got out. But one of the reasons that ship sank was because so quickly, and I don't want to, well, let me just say this. But number one, on the port side of the ship, there was a long galleyway which went from the bow to the stern called Scotland Road, and it was used by the crew, and they could get back and forth easily to the ship, and, you know, with no impedance. And the water got above the watertight bulkheads, and it just went through Scotland Road like crap through a goose. And in the meanwhile, Lightoller, who was one of the men who was saved, who was one of the ship's officers, they had opened a big port door hoping that lifeboats would come back. Now, these port doors were like huge things. They weren't little portholes or a little doorway. They were big things that could accommodate all kinds of traffic. And that door was open. And when that water line got to the point that it was at that door, that ship just started pouring right on in. I mean, that water did.
Well, you know, it's amazing that we can know so much about something that happened with so few surviving witnesses.
Well, another thing, when they had certain, inquiries into the sinking and the reports of eyewitnesses, there was one lady who's there who was said the ship broke in two, and they grabbed her microphone from her and wouldn't let her testify. And they just said, well, this is just her opinion, because they did not want the people to know that the Titanic really broke in two, in spite of eyewitness testimony. And the British Board of Trade, I think, accepted in their inquiry that the ship had sunk intact. And it was basically just a cover-up from the White Star Line. And the way they treated those people, I mean, for example, the bandmaster, Wallace Hartley, and his musicians, they were considered to be, they didn't want to pay them White Star wage, so they considered to be contract employees, and they were classed as second-class passengers. Now, also on the Titanic, you had, the difference between the Titanic and the Olympic was the Olympic had an open companionway on the outside, whereas the Titanic's companionway was closed, and there was a French restaurant. It was called the Café Parisien, and it was run by an Italian chef of great renown in Europe at that time, Monsieur Gatti, and he had 37 waiters, and these were also contract employees. And all those people were lost. Monsieur Gatti and his entire staff were. And, of course, the Café Parisien was the place where they had these nice wicker chairs and jealousy vines running up. And you've seen the pictures, I'm sure. And when the ship finally, well, when the hullabaloo died down, the White Star Line even sent the families of the officers bills for their uniforms, the ones who had died. They actually billed families for the cost of the uniform that the man was wearing when he closed his eyes in death in the North Atlantic. Can you believe that?
Jesus, God.
Absolutely. The people are the levers of power. And there's a direct parallel between the levers of power, or those who hold the levers of power today, and the levers of power the way they were then, but they were held by some very wealthy people who didn't give a damn about anybody but themselves, and they had, to them, the cost of human life meant nothing whatsoever. And if you weren't a member of their own, then, you know, you were just a untermensch, or you served at their convenience or pleasure. And, you know, when you look at it in all of the broad spectrum, we're pretty much going back to where we were back in 1912, or around the turn of the century, or the onset of the war, First World War.
Well, that's one of the things that, you know, in my conversation with Sandra last night, it just sort of grabbed me, this notion that that we really can be making the same damn dumb mistakes.
Well, I mean, Bob, you know, for example, back when World War One started, basically, it was started because of the Archduke's assassination, and then things began to escalate because they had all these secret
Right, but all of those secret treaties had been negotiated beforehand, and...
And basically, Germany gave Austria her blank check. And to a certain extent, we have given Israel a blank check.
Oh, we haven't just given Israel a blank check. We have given Israel the blank check, the whole book, the register, as well as added them onto the signature card.
Well, yeah, and there are a lot of people who would like to see conflicts in that area, but I can guarantee you one thing, if they do...
Jesus, I don't, because, I mean, Jim, for every soul that I can imagine, and you know me, you know my nature... I think about working people. I don't give a tinker's damn about the lobster for lunch crowd. I really don't. But I think about working people and crafts people and people who, you know, earn their bread by the sweat of their brow. The other day I was listening to a beautiful duet between Kenny Chesney and Willie Nelson singing that Lucky Old Son.
Mm-hmm.
You know, toil for my bread.
Right.
Yeah. I think about people like that. And, you know, there are folks, you know, there's a guy making a living running a bakery in Tel Aviv. And there's a woman in Iran whose only goal in life is to see her children grow up. And I don't want either of them dead.
No, I don't either.
And I know you don't, because, you know, you have a decent spirit. And I don't understand the people on either side of this potential conflict who think that that's okay. I mean, Ehud Barak, who used to be the Prime Minister of Israel, said in a fairly recent speech, Jim, that if they go to war with Iran, there will not be 500 Israelis dead. And that there won't be 50 if people will just stay inside their houses.
Well, Bob, there were people who, at the onset of war, World War I, said it would be so quick that there would be...
Well, you had people queuing up to join the militaries who were afraid they were going to miss the fun.
Yeah, they thought they were, you know, they said it's going to be dinner in Paris and lunch in Paris and dinner in St. Petersburg on the German side. But it wasn't that case. The whole thing just degenerated from a war of position, of mobilization, or a mobile war, into one of stalemate and position in these trenches that became mud mausoleums.
And see, every time, you know, I'm getting ready to go on the road, as I announced earlier. I'll be back in Washington, D.C. next week. And the route that you have to take, as I'm sure you well know, is to go, you know, from here up to I-66 and I-66 east across northern Virginia to D.C.
Yeah.
And you pass literally within a couple of hundred yards of that portion of the Manassas battlefield, which is protected by federal ownership.
Right.
I have never set foot on it. I hope someday, because there's something about those Civil War battlefields that speaks to me. That, you know, I started being taught about it and taken to battlefields when I was just a little fella. You know, when you grow up where I grew up, it is almost de rigueur that one be taken to the Shiloh battlefield, and that's as profound a moment as any young human being can have. I would liken it to a Frenchman being taken to Verdun, or a French child.
Yeah, and I've been through the same experience.
You absolutely have. And so every time I drive past the Manassas battlefield exit, I think about the fine gentlemen and ladies who of what passed for Washington society back then. Who got their picnic baskets out and their carriages and their horses and put on their day finery, the ladies with their hats and the chiffon ties that kept them from blowing off in the breeze, and, you know, do let's go out and watch those rebels get their asses handed to them. I'm sure they didn't talk quite like that. But the men in their mutton chops and their tail coats and so forth. Oh, yes, dear, do. It'll be a lovely afternoon. And they got caught up in the rout, and they got caught up in the retreat when those upstarts handed the boys in blue their rear ends. You know, things started out fairly well and then degenerated quickly. And, you know, there's all, and I guess the point that I'm trying to make, Jim, is that in any instance of contemplated conflict, there's always a part of the idiot class, and the idiot class seems always to be that class which has more dollars than sense, and no one, and no skin in the game, as far as that is concerned, who say, oh, this will be over day after tomorrow. Whether it's Washington, D.C. in 1861, London in 1914, Paris in 1914, Berlin in 1914, or in fact inside the Oval Office in March of 2002, when one George W. Bush looks up and says, "Thucks to Dom, we're taking him out."
Yeah, I know.
It is no small cause for reflection, is it, Jim?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, basically war is a very terrible thing. It's an instrument of national policy, but it also...
But getting into them because you've just got a hankering for it?
Well, that's no excuse for any type of conflict, particularly when it's going to involve nation states and millions of people, or any or any types of people. I mean, you know, it's a...
Well, I tell you what. Before
I think it, I think it was. I don't know if it was Robert E. Lee. He said, "It is a pity that war is so terrible, lest we become too fond of it."
Actually, he said, "It is a good thing that it is so terrible, lest we should become so too fond of it."
Right. Exactly. And of course, he made the biggest mistake in the war. A brilliant general, and you know, he was in his own way, for his own time, in my opinion, a thoroughly decent man, and who believed. He just followed the dictates of his own conscience. And, you know, you said you wish they'd strung him up, but I'm glad they didn't. And,
well, I can't help thinking we wouldn't have half the problems today we do if they had.
But, you know, Bob, after that war was over and he was basically given his life and, you know, given his right, given his freedom, he was in his Episcopal church in Richmond, Tennessee. And, of course, there were black people there. They were no longer in the balcony. And Robert E. Lee went to the communion rail, or a black man went to the communion rail initially and was followed. Nobody else would go up there, but was followed by Robert E. Lee. And that's a true story. And, you know, when you think about military history and you think about people like Jeb Stuart and some of the other Confederate generals.
Well, you know, the one that pisses me off the most, I think, is probably James Longstreet. Because he went on to become a railroad baron, Jim. And
and
he was a part of the crafting of the Lost Cause. Because the Lost Cause only comes around about 1875 or so, when they start talking, and that's when that myth comes, well, you know, we could have whooped them, but...
I know, Bob.
And the business about, you know, it wasn't really about slavery. And that's when they were trying to craft everything that would reimpose slavery in everything but name.
Well, my main ancestor who fought in the war was a Confederate Brigadier General named Richard Herron Anderson. And he later became a superintendent of railroads. And then, of course, when he died, was so poor. And he's buried in St. Helena's Churchyard on Beaufort Island of Beaufort. They didn't have even a matching pair of socks in which to bury him. But
and you know, the same thing, I had cause to look up the origins of Clemson University.
Right.
And Clemson University was founded on ground that was owned by John C. Calhoun.
Oh yeah, the nullifier.
And his daughter... And you know, he was one of those people, you know, Lincoln has no living descendants. I mean, at all. None. And neither does John C. Calhoun, and neither does Jefferson Davis. You know, it's almost as though there's some sort of divine pox upon their houses, if you know what I mean. But John C. Calhoun had a daughter who survived. None of his sons survived.
Right.
And I'm not being a sexist, I'm just observing what the history was. His daughter, however, survived and married the man who wound up creating Clemson University.
Right.
And his Calhoun's wife died penniless. And when the man who founded and he fought on the southern side in the Civil War, when the man who founded Clemson University died, he left that estate, which of course had been entirely built, as Charles C. Mann noted, by African labor.
Right.
He left it to be founded as a university. That ground was that ground of that plantation became Clemson.
I knew that, right. I remember, of course, a strong Thurman was from that area of South Carolina too, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Up near Edgefield and those areas like that. And
well, it's easy to wander off into those historical weeds, but
of course it is.
I think we would do well to remember, Jim, that human. Well, there's always somebody who's willing well, what's the old saying? You know, you got a few drunks on a Friday night, and there's always some asshole who's standing there saying, "Come on, let's you and him fight." You know what I mean? By the way, you got some email during the time that we were conferring here.
I see.
Andy wrote in from California, and he said, "No wonder we can't get health care as a human right. First, we have to get the right to bear arms at the UN. Once everyone has a gun, then we'll get health care as a human right. Then we'll need it more than ever. Since the U.S. has over 700 foreign bases and is the number one worldwide occupier, purveyor of corporate hegemony and intimidation, I would think Newton Leroy Gingrich's wish would be to get it would get a would I would think Newton Leroy Gingrich's wish would get a lot of American occupiers killed. What a perverse speech. Boggles rationality. Just plain surreal. Happiness is indeed a warm gun to Newton Leroy Gingrich." And then Jack also noted, he said it's funny how Newton, the right wingers, want everyone to have guns to protect themselves from attacks, but they want to further and further limit people's ability to resolve things in court. You know, because they're all the time going off on tort reform. And that is a brilliant observation.
Yeah, I guess it is. But
and then finally, this little piece of fan mail from Kim. "I knew there was a reason I have a secret crush on Jim. I was raised Episcopalian, too."
Well, thank you, Kate. thank you, Kim. I appreciate that very much. I mean, we're not nearly as frozen as people think we are, nor do we have, you know, popsicle sticks up our rear ends, that's for sure. But I just wanted to basically cover a few areas of ground there about, you know, in honor of those people, those 1,502 people who perished on the Titanic, because in many cases they were of low class in steerage, and because of the stupidity and arrogance of the men who held the levers of power, and people like J. Bruce Ismay, the chairman of the White Star Line, who was on board, who conveniently slipped into a lifeboat and saved his own skin while there were still women and children on the boat decks.
And was it Carnegie who went down?
No, Carnegie didn't go down. He wasn't on the ship. The one who was going to board the ship was going to be J.P. Morgan.
But there was a very rich man who went down with his wife.
Well, you had, number one, Benjamin Guggenheim, but he was there with his mistress. And then...
Only Jim would know this.
Yeah, he was there with his mistress, and there was John Jacob Astor.
Okay, it was John Jacob Astor who went down with his wife, and there's a fascinating little story behind this. That, you know, it's one of those, Jesus, you know, how do you wind up knowing things? John Jacob Astor went down on the Titanic. His wife refused to leave him when she had the opportunity.
Yeah, but she was saved. Her name was Madeline Force.
Okay, who am I thinking? Oh, darn it.
You're thinking of Mr. and Ms. Isidore Strauss, the founder of Macy's.
Okay, yeah, refused to leave.
They offered him a place in the boat, or they told him, you know, her a place in the boat. And she said, "I've been with my husband too long, and it's too, I'm not going to leave him now."
So in reading that, a man was profoundly moved by it, and he went on to found a group called the Roycrofters. You ever heard of them?
No,
Well, he was a creator of aphorisms, and a gatherer of thoughts, and his name was Elbert Hubbard.
That name sounds familiar.
And my grandfather, who was born in 1894, my grandfather Kincaid, had both the notebooks of Elbert Hubbard and the Elbert Hubbard Reader, and we have them to this day. And they were magnificently bound books, beautifully printed, and printing was the thing that the Roycrofters, who had a bit of a utopian streak about them, produced. And my mother tells me that he read them almost religiously. Elbert Hubbard went on to write a thing called, and I know you've heard of this, The Letter to Garcia.
Yeah, I have.
Well, a few years after, he was married for a great long, lifelong to his beloved wife. And just a few years later, he was aboard the Lusitania with his wife.
Oh, dear.
And when that happened, Jim, there was no getting him into a lifeboat, nor his wife.
Well, Bob, they only had...
Because they were... they said, no way. If it's good enough for the Strausses, it's good enough for us.
Well, you know, back in those days, there were two competing ocean line companies. The first was the Cunard line, and they had the Mauritania, the Aquitania, and the Lusitania. And back in 1908, Bruce Ismay and Lord Peary, who was the chairman of Harlan and Wolff, had a meeting at Lord Peary's home in Belgravia Square in London, and they decided they would create three super ships, the Olympic, the Titanic, and the Britannic. And I think the Majestic may have been in there some, but I know they planned originally at that meeting for three of those ships. And what is so incredible is that the Titanic itself, basically, it was a race for competition in the immigrant trade, because that's where they really made their money on those ships, was carrying the...
Because they didn't make their money in first class, because you actually have to do things for the people in first class.
A steerage ticket cost the equivalent of today £900, or then £900. It wasn't cheap. And, of course, on the Titanic, the steerage passengers had very nice dining facilities, and, you know, their tables were covered with cloth. They were served by waiters. And, you know, for many of them, it was the first time that a lot of them had seen a knife and fork, I'm sure. I mean, they had, grown up in such abject poverty. And back in those days when, you know, and family was together, the eldest son inherited the property. The daughter was supposed to get married and have a dowry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, married some wealthier person who would further help their station in life. And then, of course, you had the middle children, and they really had nothing. And a lot of these people, particularly ones in Ireland and England, who belonged to that particular section of families, they were the ones who came to the New World or came to America to try to, you know.
Oh, and by the way, Marty points out a little bit of not a correction, but an addition. He said the third ship was to be called Gigantic. It was renamed Britannic to try to avoid a close link to Titanic.
Right, right, right.
So, but it started life as the Gigantic. Well, Jim, I thank you very, very much for your for this conversation. It's been a lovely. But you know, this is the way it should happen on a Friday on a front porch, isn't it?
Well, I would think so. I mean, it's good to exchange information and, you know, just to talk about things, particularly on the anniversary of what we've been discussing, and plus some of the other things, tales not of the Vienna woods, but tales of the southern woods. So we pretty much covered everything from cows who broke into stills to the sinking of...
You know, I would love to see a portrait of that done by the people who are well-versed in painting the fox-hunting portraits that you see nailed into the walls of country clubs and the like. It would be a beautiful thing, Jim.
Well, I guess it would. I mean, you know, those cows, they, like I say, when they got into that sour mash or whatever was in those containers, they had a good time, and then, of course, they rolled right over on their backs, and they were just making all kinds of noises and stuff like that.
The same has happened to me on more than a few occasions, and we shan't go into details, Jim.
Okay, and beware of any policeman who has a funny look on his face and who isn't accompanied by his sidekick, because you never can tell what he might be doing.
Well, here, that's true, because Ron in Raleigh observed that, you know, he's in Raleigh, North Carolina, so he knows of which he speaks. He said, it brings new meaning to the Krispy Kreme slogan, hot now.
Well, there you go.
Jim, have a lovely weekend.
You too. Good night.
Bye now. That is what a Friday on the front porch sounds like. Not just here, but I mean, that's the kind of badinage that goes on in a culture that still remembers how to tell a tale and spin a yarn. Many thanks to Jim for that. You know, the beautiful thing about getting taught history by Jim is the fact that he relates it in such personal fashion as to make it seem as though you know you're getting the straight skinny, because you're almost pretty damn sure he was likely in the room. a note coming in from our buddy Jug of Punch. He said, Bob, in the environment of corrupting money, the only way we can get the media we need is to fund it ourselves. And ain't it the truth? He said, I will gladly match $50 U.S. Let us move the widget up by $100 U.S. His 50 plus 50 from any of you, and there we go, and we're a little closer to being done with this halfway mark into April. Thank you very kindly, Thomas. You know the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. You don't even have to go to the Contribute tab. It's right there on the front page. We're working on getting the subscription widget back up and functioning. I don't know what the hell went sideways with that thing, but it did. So we'll take a little break and come back with your conversation. 20 minutes past the hour. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366. 877 the numeral 4 head on. If you want to save us the cost of the toll-free charges, it's 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. This is The Horn.
Don't you rock my boat, 'cause I don't want my boat to be rocking anyhow. Please don't you rock my boat, no, 'cause I don't want my boat to be rocking. I'm telling you that, oh, ooh, oh, I like it, the light of this. Can you miss? And you should know. Ooh, oh, when I like it, the light of this. Am I really in? Ooh, yeah. You satisfy my soul. Morning fine, evening cold. Why, my soul, yes, I've been a-telling you. Give me the sweetest pain. Happy inside all the time. Oh, can't you see what you've done for me, yeah? You make me feel like when we bend a new corner. Sweet dead winners, yeah. Well, we've been a new corner. We feel like sweet dead winners. And I said, oh, ooh, oh, I like it, the light of this. Yes, I do. And you should know.
Calling, calling, like this by my soul.
from. We got to get together. You'll meet each other. And can't you see what I've got for you, yeah? I'm happy, 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 happy. There's not even time to be blue.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
The hour. We are about halfway through this Friday on the front porch on the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and well, this is the Head On Radio Network. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Discoverable in a wide variety of broadcast platforms, including but not limited to iTunes Podcast, iTunes Radio, podcasting at WhiteRoseSociety.org, the Listen Live button at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, and, of course, Stitcher Internet Radio. Kind of blows my mind every time I say that. Let's continue onward and go directly to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Let's see if you know why that song has such good timing this month.
Which one?
The one you just played.
Jimmy Buffett? Steamer?
No, the other one, the Bob Marley one.
Bob Marley? Don't Rock My Boat?
Yeah.
Well, I thought it kind of worked nicely with the Titanic anniversary, but
I think you're in sync with the universe, Bob, because in about 10 or 11 days drops the new Bob Marley documentary on 420.
No kidding.
In theaters, yeah.
Really?
A lot of people have been waiting for it, and supposedly it's pretty good, and it has a lot of interviews with family members.
God, I love those little moments with those little moments with the universe. It's nice.
Yeah, I did find some. That's perfect marketing, though, to drop it on 420, even if it is cliche.
Oh, shoot, yeah.
but yeah, when you're talking about Israel, it's almost like we told Israel, here's a Aladdin's lamp, and they said you can use it to have wishes, and they said okay, and they said, genie, I wish for endless wishes.
Well, no, actually, I was thinking, I just wish all the Arabs would go away. You know, we do have those 200 nuclear weapons, and we've never promised not to use them first.
Yeah, that's right. I think the biggest problem, though, is to get them settled down in the area with the media that we have now, with the newspapers, the tabloids, radio, the books, just everything else, just stoking up hysteria that need not be there when you can think of, like, I don't know, at least dozens and dozens of more things to worry about.
Well, yeah. Dozens and dozens of things that don't involve having to slaughter innocent people.
Right, exactly what I'm talking about.
Because one of the, you know, one of the reasons I am profoundly anti-war, David, is because as soon as you enter into it, innocent people start dying. And as soon as innocent people start dying, and I don't mean to sound like one of those cable commercials, as soon as innocent people start dying, I start getting furious. Because then the people who have nothing but a profit motive in this, and don't think that there isn't some profiteering in all this saber rattling over Iran, bought a gallon of gas lately. Then they start bandying about words like collateral damage, and then I just want to hit somebody because you know. Did we learn nothing? A million people, really, a million people dead in Iraq because George W. Bush ran around saying, well, you know, that Saddam, he tried to kill my daddy. You know, and you know, I mentioned it with Sandra. You know, I have said repeatedly, look, you know I'm going to vote for Obama. You know, there might be some nose-holding involved, but... You know, I want him to be better than he is.
Right.
But you know what? That's a deal breaker. And I think maybe we'd better put it out there that it is a deal breaker. That, you know what? If you're just going to go to war with Iran just like Romney would, you might as well let Romney be president.
I think the biggest problem with it is that our culture is so bred for... military conflict, and we expect one within a specific period.
Culture schmulture, David. We have an economy that is predicated upon military conflict. I mentioned it last week. We've got this really dumb boat that can't survive a hit that we're going to spend buku bajillion dollars on. Because we've got a congressman, a Republican congressman from Mobile, Alabama, where the damn thing's being built, who says, yeah, but it looks like something Darth Vader would drive. No shit, David, he said that.
You know, that's the biggest problem is trying to connect to middle America about where it concerns military and war conflicts, because they seem to think, and I think this is what most of America seems to think, who aren't reading up on the issues of war and pay attention to stuff like anti-war, counterpunch, stuff like that. They're on automatically almost like they go back to a reset dial and they think, well, it can't be as bad as we think it is, and then just start the whole process over again.
Leather, rinse, repeat, right?
Yeah, I mean that's is what we seem to be stuck in, and you know we don't do ourselves any favors by when people who are really 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 brilliant people and well read and give us these scenarios why we must go to war with Iran, people who are Democrats or progressives or anything of that nature, of a situation where we would have to find ourselves in a conflict with them. It doesn't make any sense. It reminds me, Bob, of the hysteria that they're trying to stoke up with, you know, news headlines of the week with North Korea with a failed rocket.
You know, I had a pitch to I'm sure they would have found a way to say, no thanks, you little pissant internet broadcaster. But I had a pitch to invite Homer Hickam on to explain why the North Korean rocket failed. I am much less interested in why the North Korean rocket failed, David, than why North Korea feels the need to have rockets.
Right, right.
Or am I crazy?
No. I think that's a relevant point, because I think that the biggest issue is you know, there's some people who think that Is North Korea just doing a head fake and just saying, turn the rocket down, because they know what would happen if it hit something? Or is their technology that faulty? And, I mean, you could go either way with it.
Rocket building is rather complex business.
Mm.
This thing broke up just as the second stage was supposed to ignite. And, of course, North Korea said, well, we were putting it up so we could have a satellite. Yeah, because, I don't know what, they want to catch the bounce of Dancing with the Stars?
Something like
and
that.
And I guess I'm being a smartass there, but...
Jong's son, he's really an Eric Clapton, so they probably want to catch, like, the satellite concert of Clapton next time he's performing in London or something.
Yeah, you know, Lottie in the chat room, our chat room moderator, alongside our buddy Sparky, Lottie noting, North Korea wants rockets because they need food. They can trade rockets for food with us.
Hmm.
You know, this is, and I'm not going to get all Wednesday or anything, David, but the itinerant rabbi said, you need to just feed people.
Right.
He didn't ask them, you know, what their nationality was or whether anybody had chopped on their wee-wees or anything like that. He said, feed them. What would happen if we just fed North Korea? I know I'm being stupidly idealistic. But what would happen if we just fed North Korea?
I think a lot of people would be happy, and they would say, wow, we're getting food. This is something we haven't had in a while. And they would be open to listening where we wanted to go next in regarding talks. Now, maybe the military and the dictatorship, they would give us the side eye while the food was being handed out or distributed somehow. But, you know, that's where it has to start. I was listening to sound bites. You know, on right-wing radio, they were playing making the rounds of the ending the sanctions and all of that stuff. The quotes from the administration, you know, just putting that up to past 11 on the volume dial. And to me, it occurs to me that why do you want people to starve in a country that has glitchy technology? That can barely power their country with electricity, and you still want to make them suffer? It's none of this makes any sense whatsoever.
None.
I don't see how.
Except for the fact that we've got to, in a sort of Orwellian world, you always have to have an enemy state.
Right.
North Korea, and the enemy state always has to be somebody that, well, you know what, we could probably take them. North Korea, Iran, you know, I mean, because you don't want to go out and really poke the big boys. I mean, you know, China, after all, makes all of our crap and has all of the rubber. You know, witness the Charles C. Mann conversation, right?
Basically, all people with snow skin are okay.
Yeah, kind of.
I've been, I think the thing that's so amazing about it is that, okay, do a hypothetical scenario, which I'm sure they've run enough simulations. What are the chances that North Korea says, we're really feeling a big gutsy with South Korea today. I think we're just going to go march on the border with our military. That's not going to happen. They're boxed in.
Well, nobody's going to sit still for that. You know, China's not going to be particularly happy about that. You know, they're not going to, yeah, go on, you do that.
You know, it reminds me, I don't know if you ever got to see, and I keep recommending because it's the greatest documentary ever, Bob. It's the one that Vice TV did where they were able to sneak into North Korea, and they showed North Korea like no one has ever seen it before. And they went, like, basically on a sightseeing trip with a tour guide, and it took them, I don't know, something like 12 months. And some sneaky maneuvers to get in, just to show people what North Korea is like. And it's like it is like an episode of The Twilight Zone, because in one part they have tea houses that are spread out for like every 100 miles they'll have a tea house. And when you go in that tea house, everything is set up to serve one guest. Too much food, too much drink, too much everything. And it's and then they ask the guy.
So is that the North Korean equivalent of a Potemkin village?
Basically, and the crazy thing about it is there's a part in it where the guy's just sitting in the hallway, and the Korean music is playing, and everyone's smiling, and they're bringing in food, and they're showing, okay, stupid American, here's some food, and they just keep bringing him dishes and dishes, and knowing that he can't possibly eat it. I'm not kidding you. It's like a pile of dishes and stuff. And the
yeah, because he's supposed to go back to America. Them North Koreans gave me more food than I can eat. I tell you what, they got a lot of food, them North Koreans.
Yeah, I mean, that's the craziest thing of all, is all this food in these select different places, and yet they still can't feed their or they want to feed their country or something along those lines. I just found it pretty mind-boggling, the fact of how it was set up. Their museum is absolutely insane. Everything, this is the craziest thing.
Well, wait, back up again. Yeah. I mean, you've really, really piqued my interest.
Yeah.
Name of documentary again, please. I'm writing it down this time.
So you go to Vice TV. You go to the Vice TV website.
Yeah.
And then you just search for, they put a new search engine. It's pretty easy. You just type in North Korea and the documentary will come up, and you can watch it in completely in its entirety right there. And
I mean, but getting inside there is pretty difficult. Are you confident that this is on the straight?
Oh, they did it on the straight. They did it on the straight. And what's amazing about it is, you know, every single little detail they went to. I mean, there were just a few situations where they're like, No cameras. You smile here. We're going to put you in jail. Absolutely insane. When they went to the museum, they were gushing about the museum. You got to go to the museum. So he was stoked to go to the museum. And come to find out, this is what Kim Jong-il's idea of a museum is. Basically, everything that's sent around the world, like basically tourist souvenirs, it all goes in the museum. So you'll see all kinds of stuff from the, like, 1940s, 1950s, 1960s. There is no historical significance. It's just all put up there for, like, an amusement.
Well, I have a query coming in from Jim.
Yeah.
He says, ask David from Maine about winter kimchi.
You know, there is something with the... There is a point in the sake. There's a part in the documentary that's almost like... It's too classic for words, Bob. There's a moment of karaoke, and he doesn't recognize any of these songs on this South Korean. Okay, this is kind of the giveaway. This South Korean karaoke machine. So he's like, I don't even know any of these songs. So how do I sing karaoke? And they're all waiting for him to sing karaoke. So he sees this song at the bottom, Sex Pistols, Anarchy. So he puts it on. And he starts yelling and saying,
No, stop it. Okay?
No,
stop it. There is not a karaoke machine in North Korea that has the Sex Pistols on it. You have transcended the bounds of my credulity, David.
I know. That's the surreal part. And he starts singing. He's like, I don't want it, and I Christ. And you can see the people in the room, like, oh my God, did he say Antichrist? They don't understand any other words. And you can tell just by the reaction, they're just trying to hold themselves together. Because here's the moment, people. They never experienced punk music. They're experiencing punk music through a translation of karaoke induced.
Oh Jesus! No, this is so postmodern as to be. Oh dear God!
And I mean, what's so crazy about it when you see it is. Is like is just the constant proving when you're boxed in a country like that, you constantly have to prove yourself to be that person. I assume that's like pretty much all around the world. If you're completely picked on and bullied all the time, so there's this tone with the guides. They're like, oh ho ho, you stupid American! You see this ship? We capture the ship. You see the holes right there? You're never getting the ship back.
Oh, what is that, the Pueblo or the Mayaguez? I can't remember.
I think so, yeah. I think it's one of those. And I mean, and he's looking at the ship, and you can hear in the narration, he's like, I understand they're really proud of this ship, but, I don't care. They can keep it. But, I mean, it just kept going on and on about
this. Nice boat. Looks like it needs some work.
Right. And, you know, it's just a whole... It's the whole politics of it. And there's a side note to it that I found really interesting. And this is also something, like, I guess you could say he's like, Anthony Bourdain on steroids, the guy who does this.
How did I know that Bourdain was going to come into this conversation sooner or later?
I mean, they do eat a lot of food on the program, and they meet a lot of crazy characters. So, you know, there is kind of that kind of parallel with crossing different cultures. But one of the things that he discovered was he said that there's a place in Siberia where they literally move North Koreans there, and they build these villages kind of like slave camps, and they tell them it's North Korea.
Oh, weird.
So when they went through there, they went to this place in Siberia, and they were like, oh my God, all of these people think this is North Korea. And the guide was trying to explain to them why they won't tell him it's North Korea, and all of this tied together. But I mean, it's an amazing documentary. Also, the one that they did on Liberia is just insane.
I don't want you to divulge any secrets or anything,
yeah.
David. But I've been. How do you find this stuff? I mean, there's you on one hand.
Yeah.
And there's News Ninja Gene on the other, who reads the whole freaking internet before breakfast every day. And I feel like a total spaz. I mean, the internet is a very big place. How do you find it?
Well, you know, the thing about it is for example, I'll give you an example. When you were talking about that cop pleasuring himself, when Jim was talking about
that. No, that was Jim talking about that. I am not responsible for that. Now quit it.
Okay. Well, when Jim was talking about that, you know, I typed in cop, probably not the wisest thing to do if we're going to go to a new world society pretty soon, but I typed cop pleasuring himself, and it came up with a whole bunch of searches, and you would see, like, the different forums, and one of the forums, which was hilarious to me, I had to go, Bob, was Glock Talk. It's like, Glock Talk?
Oh, what?
I gotta go here. So this whole forum, you know, they just talk about Glocks. And
how they dig their Glocks and, you know, who shot their ankle last week.
Right. And the biggest problems they had, and, you know, one of the funniest things I saw was this guy who was really, really irate because he had to show pictures of the barrel of his Glock. Now, don't go there, people. But he had to show pictures of the barrel of his Glock, and he said, there's a chip there. And obviously, you can't put any sensitive cream. That's not going to fix the barrel. You understand what I mean? So you look at the picture, and you're like, that's not that bad. This guy's insane. It's like,
see,
who cares?
I spend a lot of time, you know, I read news, you know,
yeah.
And every now and then I find something. Like, you know, David in Tennessee sent me the story about the guy in Ohio that blew away his wife and daughter and critically injured his other daughter because it's a great idea to take your gun to the Cracker Barrel. So then I get an email of a link from our buddy Isaac going back to September 28th, 2011, headline, Carrying Guns in Ohio Bars Now Legal with Permit. And, you know, that's a level of reality that I'm approaching unable to cope with. Okay, and then you're telling me that there's a forum out there of people talking about their Glocks.
Yeah, I mean, you can find a forum for every single gun. I was actually thinking, you know what would be funny? If I actually signed up to this forum, and I had like a My Little Pony Avi, and I came in, I was like, all right, man, let's talk about some guns.
Jesus.
But I was really knowledgeable on the guns, and it... And that would kind of like, they would be kind of like,
but, I mean,
really, really
but more than that, I mean, there's this beautiful thing that goes on here at the Horn. Last
right.
night, in my conversation with Sandra, I was talking about my little, you know, hey son, watch this moment as the guy with the Auburn cap walked toward me in D.C. and I said, War Eagle, and he said, War Damn Eagle. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who don't follow college football and don't understand Southern culture who said, no. Well, Kathy out in Arizona emailed me another story. This is so much fun, except for the part that it's not. A headline on AL.com. Man at Whataburger, I assume this is a hamburger place, not having reached West Virginia yet. Man at Whataburger yells War Eagle, gets punched in the eye. A man in line at a Whataburger in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, was punched after he repeatedly yelled War Eagle, according to a story in the Northwest Florida Daily News. Because, you see, it's spring break time, and Fort Walton Beach is part of what is frequently referred to as either the Redneck Riviera or L.A., Lower Alabama. And, you know, when you Auburn or Alabama or whatever, you know, spring break comes, and this time go beach. And you go down there, and you're standing in line at Whataburger, and you see some buddy with a shirt on, you go, War Eagle. And you don't know you're standing in the middle of a whole bunch of people from the University of Alabama, and they just beat your ass. But meanwhile, as bizarre as these little nuggets are, David, there's a documentary out there of people sneaking into North Korea. Though why any human being would care to sneak into North Korea, I have no damned idea. And then there's Jim out there who's going to ask him about the winter kimchi. You know, I know about kimchi because I grew up with a neighbor whose son came back with a Korean bride from the Korean War, who taught my mother how to make kimchi, and I don't have the recipe, but she explained winter kimchi, spring kimchi, summer kimchi, autumn kimchi. Oh, who knew? It's a big damn world, you know that?
But you know the funniest thing, and this is going to make you go, wow, everything does connect at the horn. Recently, I did have a customer with the name War Eagle.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did. I can show you the invoice, too.
This is like his online handle for purchasing from you?
This is his online handle, and I had another one. I'm trying to find it right now. He had this long-ass handle, and he said, like, libtards are so stupid, and it just went on and on and on, and he asked me a question, and I was like, there's no way I can answer this guy. I just looked at his handle, and I was like, oh,
just
wait,
send
wait,
him the crap and move on.
Here's the whole handle. I'm not kidding you. This is his whole name. The question he asked was,
you're not violating any eBay terms of service or anything on this, are you?
No. He said, is this genuine? And he said, thanks. And then his name was, eBay is run by anti-American libtarded moonbats. It was a bunch of hype.
Even though eBay was founded and run by a right-winger. Oh,
yeah, I mean, that's the problem. I mean, it's like, you can't argue with that because, you know, it's the same thing where someone brings up Hillary Rosen and they say that, well, that woman's a communist. It's like, really? She's a communist? And if you listen to right-wing radio, I mean, that's what they're calling her, basically. Communist and elected.
Well, Alan West kind of opened that window a couple of nights ago, now, didn't he?
Yeah.
There are 80 known communists inside the House of Representatives. Jesus.
One last thing before I go, because I want other people to get their licks in before you head out instead of head on.
Look at me teaching the up Easter Maine guy to say get his licks in.
Yeah, but also head out to head on. That's a good transition. I just wanted to check on Jug of Punch to see if he got his DVDs yet. Probably it's only been 3 days, but I'm just interested to see if they arrived.
Stand by. I will put that. Instead of waiting for the latency. You hear the clicking?
And the other thing is that next week we will be doing another. I haven't decided what it's going to be, but we're going to be doing another.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Now, see, having asked that, I got not yet almost before I'd finished typing my query. So that gives you an idea of the latency of internet radio.
Well, that's still pretty fast.
You know, I thought so, too.
But, you know, there's still some people complaining at their microwave in this country with microwaving a hot dog. Come on.
I won't. No, wait a minute. No, there is no. No. No, people do not microwave hot dogs. They don't.
Yes, they do.
Microwaves are for popcorn and boiled water.
Wow, Bob, you didn't grow up in my house. That's what we used to do instead of boiling them. I grew up in the microwave culture. When microwaves came out and they started getting really inexpensive and my family decided to get one, I was like, wow, what can you do with this thing? You know, you eat popcorn. After a while, you're like, yeah, popcorn. And you're like, oh, my God, let's try hot dogs. You know, so
hot dogs explode.
No. You see, the thing is just like everything in a in a pressure-induced environment. You just cut along the seam, and you'd be okay. But, yeah.
Way back, and this does go way back, because my mom died in 1997, they had their microwave and stuff, and she had, my mother was a devotee of the pressure cooker.
Wow.
My father was terrified of them. As in, your mother's going to blow our house to kingdom come with that damn thing someday, son. You know, that kind of thing. And my mother, because they came out with all these things for your microwave. My mother absolutely fell in love with the bacon microwaver. You know, the thing with the little ridgy things on it that, and I mean, it made perfect bacon as long as you stayed right on top of it. But I knew that my mother did not form a lasting love affair with the microwave pressure cooker when she said, "See if you can get anything out of this. It just turned my pot roast into a piece of charcoal," and handed me the microwave pressure cooker. And I think last I checked, it was third base on the old baseball field that we put in the backyard back when Ferg was a kid. Microwave pressure cooker. No, can I tell you a little secret? This is how backward we are. We don't have a microwave.
Wow, you don't have a microwave?
Don't have one.
You know, that's amazing. I mean,
but what do you do when you want popcorn?
You know, I'm backwards like you, Bob, because I'm the only one in my family. I'm literally dead serious. I will not buy a cell phone. I will not, because I think I'm like the last dinosaur, the last unicorn, all of that. And it's like, there's got to be a reason why I don't have a cell phone.
Well, that I have, but I pawn that off on the fact that I'm technologically required to have one.
Right. Well, for me, it's like a mission of passion.
But I mean, if you go to a swap meet or something, haven't you seen that new gizmo that goes on the iPhone where you can swipe cards with it straight into PayPal?
Yeah, I think I've seen a bit of those different applications and stuff. Yeah, it's really getting crazy out there.
Well, if I could ever come up with a reason to put one of those at like a broadcast table or something, I'd get one. You know, make a contribution. You know what? Maybe we'll have one of those when we go to Netroots Nation in Providence. Are you going to come down to Netroots Nation?
I would like to go. I would like to go. It's going to be in Providence, huh?
Yeah.
Hmm. And what days are we talking about here?
7th through the 10th of June.
7th through the 10th of June. You know, I might be able to make it. It all depends when you're running a business and that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I understand it. And I do have another little announcement to make. I'm waiting to see if it's going to come to complete fruition. But I I'm so excited about this because I've never seen it before. You know, Country Mouse goes to the city, David. You know how it goes.
Right.
And there's a couple of things there that really matter to me. There is a decent likelihood I'm going to be in Boston.
Wow.
Yeah, in early May, no less. So I'm really, really stoked about that.
So you're going to Boston for a seminar or
talk? No, to raise hell.
To raise hell. That's good.
I got a little note not too long back saying that our friends at the Rainforest Action Network needed a hellraiser. To get people worked up about mountaintop removal, and I just raised my little hand and said, "I'm your boy."
It almost seems like these crisscross trips that you're doing, it's only inevitable that you go overseas, right?
No, I don't think that's ever going to happen. I'm still trying to work out the Australia gig, but it hasn't happened yet.
Well, you've been a lot of places, not to cue a song or anything.
No, I am not going to play "I've Been Everywhere, I've Been Everywhere." You can just stop that right now, David.
Well, Bob, I hope you have a wonderful trip next week, and I'm sure you'll have plenty of stories to tell us all, maybe even a story about...
Oh, just hope I don't run into any more rogue fundies, okay?
McDonald's and the smoothie machine. We need to hear more tales of that.
We go down the. It's inevitable because it's the first decent stop, David. We go down the mountain. We go down the river, and it's the first place you can stop and get a coffee. And we're usually in a hurry to get out the door. Blah 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 blah. And yes, McDonald's makes better decaf than like Taco Bell. And so we stop there. And every time I stop there, I go, you know, this is not going to work out well. I'm looking at Agnes, and she goes, just go in and get the coffee, honey. And then Doodle says, I want a pineapple mango smoothie. And I just turn around and give her the stink eye.
You know, there's something about McDonald's when I was growing up. When you were a kid, they made it into such a magical place. And if you didn't go,
well, if you've ever if you got around to reading Tony Bourdain's Medium Raw, you know what he does with his daughter. You know, some children disappeared at McDonald's last week. Ronald is suspected.
You know, the thing about McDonald's though, the way they mass marketed it, and then, you know, Burger King and everyone else caught on, and they were
do you know how much that smoothie machine costs?
I can't even imagine. I'm sure it's up there.
I asked. $17,000. That thing's got more complex software in it than what went to the moon. Of course, so does your phone. Well, not your phone, but yeah.
You figured out how to run it in a few minutes, though.
That's true.
What does that say about?
I just keep coming back. Now, are you retro enough to be at all conversant with the original Jetsons?
Yes, the original.
Okay, Jetsons. Do you remember when George got his notice that he had to come in for Space National Guard drill?
Yeah.
And they ran him through the battery of tests, and of course he put and he came to the one robot station that said, put pegs in holes, and he neatly arranged them all, and they sent Private Jetson off, and there was this sort of Murgatroyd looking neo Neanderthal, and they said, put pegs in holes, and he takes the round peg, he puts it in the square hole, it doesn't fit, and then he bashes the machine into submission, and they stamped his helmet officer material. That's what I felt like on the day of the day I became the smoothie whisperer.
Isn't that something? The Jetsons had it, they had it right on target. I'm still disappointed we don't have Uniblab, by the way.
We do have the Uniblab. Are you kidding?
Do we?
Sure. It's about 10 stories into pure bedrock at the National Security Administration. That's the thing that Agent Fred minds every night as he listens to the program.
But the question is, does he sound like Uniblab?
He has to, because it was built by a nerd or a gang of nerds who were raised on the Jetsons. That or else it sounds like the Thundercats if they're younger.
Well, I guess we're gonna have to maybe we can get some sound waves in the future.
Just be patient. It'll happen, David. It'll happen.
Well.
Have a wonderful weekend, David.
All right, you too, Bob. Later.
Bye now. Jesus. Oh, that's our buddy David from Maine, our pop culture correspondent. I got to go watch the North Korea documentary. I didn't even know such a thing existed. By the way, our buddy Lee writing in from his smartphone. Our head writer, David, in Tennessee, has the night off. It is home opener night for the Nashville Sounds. Nashville Sounds, their AAA ball club. And Lee just wrote in to say, oh, the weather is perfect. The Yazoo beer is fresh and cold. And Dad just said hi to Miss Emmy Lou Harris, and he is happy. As well he should be, Lee. As well he should be. Jim, following up on the concept of winter kimchi, he says, sneak a jar of this into a tea party or NRA meeting with an open to see who's with an option to see who starts firing first. I get it. Sneak a jar of this into a tea party or an NRA meeting with an opener to see who starts firing first. I get it. Yeah. It's profound. Profound. And so at 4 minutes past the hour, we will continue onward. Hey, welcome to the program. And nobody's there. Hey, welcome to the program.
You know, that was my silence, Bob. This is Richard.
Hey, Richard. How do you know that was your silence?
Because I dumped myself off the phone by accident and had to redial. I figure that your
well, system, the nerve of you.
Well, I figure your system hangs on to the calls after somebody's hung up.
Well, yeah, and the funny thing is, with the old system, I used to. Okay, I'll tell you a little secret here. Secrets of broadcasting with Bob Kincaid.
Tell me about them.
Well, it used to be that if I, you know, I've got a mixing board here.
Sure.
And it's got a little LED level light, right?
Good.
And so if I punched the button to bring somebody online and there was nobody there, it would have reverted to a busy, you know, one of those fast busy signals.
Yeah.
And so before I ever brought the fast busy signal online, I would see the unmistakable appearance on the LED of a fast busy signal.
Yes.
Blink, 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 blink. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. So
I know you put the dead ones right on the air and nobody's there.
Right, I have no way of knowing.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
So
it was both.
Oh, okay then. This is Richard's fault.
This is Richard's. Well, you know, I'm talking on a cordless phone, and sometimes I hit the phone against something. It's like Sandra's, beeps, you know. It's like I may hit my phone against something, and that press a button, and a weird thing will happen. So, gee, I've been thinking about the Defense Spending Authorization Act.
Yeah. The NDAA.
Yeah, we had, what, 6 senators who voted against it? Did I get that right?
Offhand, I can't recall.
That's what I think.
You're making me time travel on a Friday on the front porch. That's tough. That's tough.
Well,
duty, Richard.
Let me tell you where my head is at about that. It's pretty severe. I've been thinking, you know, every senator, and Obama, of course, took an oath of office in which they swore to defend, how does it go? Defend the Constitution against all enemies, domestic.
Foreign and domestic.
Yeah. Well, every senator who voted for that bill betrayed their oath of office and committed treason against all of us. What do you think of that?
I understand what you're saying, Richard, but I am loath to go there. And I'm loath to go there because that's one, and I'm not comparing you, please understand. But I lived through, as you did, 8 years of Bill Clinton and right-wingers hooting and hollering, picking the little lice out of each other's fur, gnashing them between their little teeth, and screeching and squealing and flinging poo like right-wingers do, over how Bill Clinton had violated his oath of office. There is no crime, and you know, once you find out, when you and it's all we're talking about, they're all members of the 1%. When you're talking about the 1%, stuff like that doesn't matter anymore. Just like if you talk about the preamble of the Constitution of the United States, Antonin Scalia, Fat Tony, the son of a fascist, will tell you without batting an eye that the preamble to the Constitution is not law in the United States. How he gets there, I think, involves Ouija boards, magic eight balls, and no small amount of psilocybin mushrooms, possibly acid, and maybe even horse tranquilizer, but he says it. And it gives me the creeps, because there's something about oath taking. Can we have a history moment here?
Sure.
Oath taking is a remaindered over remnant of a culture that was fascinated with secret society. Okay, the framers of the Constitution, for instance, a bunch of them were Freemasons. Some of them were Rosicrucians. Some of them were Knights. I don't know, were there any Catholics? Yeah, Knights of Columbus. And they all had secret handshakes. I mean, the Mormon Church to today, to this very day, Richard, has secret handshakes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you know, I joined a fraternity in college. We've got a secret handshake. I was a member of a group called D-Malay, which, you know, will drive the people who think Freemasonry is of the devil just absolutely batshit.
What is that about, by the way?
We had a secret handshake. I've got a little catalog of secret handshakes that I still remember.
There's a D-Malay on a back street not far from me, and I've always wondered what in the world it is.
Is it somebody named that, or they got a little sign out front?
It's got a sign with an emblem on it.
Yeah, and it's a crown with a couple of swords through it?
I think so. It's outside a house.
Yeah, it's a young men's organization, and it's rather a noble one, too. It's just like any other secret society. They're not secret anymore. They'll perform all their rituals in front of the public, blah, 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 blah. Because, you know, they didn't want to be accused of being rapists like the Boy Scouts. But, you know, they teach cardinal and principal virtues. They teach love of mother, love of family, love of country. And they teach no small amount of actual history along the way. The fact is, but, you know, what gets some people up in arms about that, and it doesn't me because I grew up with them and I know them and I love them dearly, it is an organization that is sponsored by the Ancient and Accepted Order of Masons. And consequently, it has a lot of the secret society Masonic iconography about it.
And this is D-Malay?
Yeah. The Order of D-Malay.
So what is this, the junior version of it?
Not really, because it's not like you get to graduate into Masonry or you know, you have to or anything like that. No, it's a young men's organization that seeks to take young men off the streets, and they've got a young women's organization as well.
Seeks to take off the streets.
It was founded by a fella in Kansas City, Missouri, back at a time when there were a lot of street urchins, and Freemasonry being an organization that was dedicated to civic virtue and civic pride and that sort of thing, they gathered a bunch of fatherless, homeless kids together and said, let's go bowling.
That's really interesting because the location of this place is not in the best part of town. Not that Richmond, California has a whole lot of...
Best part of town?
What?
Not that Richmond has a whole lot of best part of town or a whole lot of bad parts of town?
No, it doesn't. It was once the murder capital of California not too long ago.
Well...
It's a rough
Within the history of D-Malay, if that's still an extant chapter, that would be a place where you want one.
Yeah. I'm confirming what you just.
Yeah, because and what you do is you teach, you know, you teach values and you teach. Well, it is a brilliant and a good organization. I can say that.
Good. It's nice to know. Well, you know, we went off on a tangent there. The point of what I was saying is that in signing the Defense Spending Authorization Act, and I'm including both of my senators who are Democrats in this, the Defense Spending Authorization Act really destroys the Bill of Rights, as far as I'm concerned. And all our politicians...
I know it's very fashionable to say that, Richard.
I don't know. I'm the only one I've ever heard say it, but...
No, believe me. I mean, Glenn Greenwald just about had a baby over the National Defense Authorization Act. And when, you know, when Glenn Greenwald has a baby, he has it over, it was Obama's fault.
Right.
Sort of broadly overlooking the fact that, you know, it's Congress that passed it. And that the National Defense Authorization Act is nothing new under the sun, as Ecclesiastes says. You have to have a National Defense Authorization Act every couple of years just so you can keep the military-industrial complex up and running.
Understood.
And there's been a National Defense Authorization Act every couple of years for the last 50 years or so. But what happens here is... the right wing wanted to accomplish some dirty crap. And so they, you know, there's that old saying about the two things in life you never want to see built or made are laws and sausages.
Right, understood.
You know, hence that reference to the ingredient list for potted meat a couple of weeks ago. And toward that end, what the Republicans did is they took a perfectly bland, otherwise banal bill, and they put some nasty crap in it to make Democrats vote against it. See, he voted against the troops, right? And the so-called progressive left grabbed hold of it and said, you know, with help from people like Glenn Greenwald, fascism is marching through America. Well, hell, you know, why didn't you ask me 8 years ago? I could have told you fascism was marching through America. It didn't happen with the National Defense Authorization Act, is what I'm saying. Does that make any sense at all?
Well, it does, except that this codifies it into law. I mean, it turns the president into an absolute dictator. I mean, think about the power that Obama said that he wasn't going to use.
Right, but back up.
In the hands of you-know-who.
Right, but back up. The president has had the potential to be an absolute dictator for a very, very long time. The potential for the president to be an absolute dictator is checked and balanced only by the right of Congress to impeach him. Now, you're older than I, so you probably remember Richard Nixon better than I. No?
I'm laughing. I don't know why. Yes, I do.
Anybody remember the secret bombing of Cambodia? I mean, I was a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Okay? That was unchecked power of the presidency. And guess what? When we finally got around to talking about impeaching Richard Nixon, were we impeaching him for the secret bombing of Cambodia?
No, not at all.
No! F no! We were impeaching him over lying about the cover-up to a low-rent piece-of-shit burglary at an apartment complex in Washington, D.C.
Well, what I have on my mind is the ability of President Gingrich, you know, to throw Bob Kincaid in jail.
Look, I've already said it. I mean, I've got my reservations locked in. I'm selling cigarettes under the Northwest Guard Tower, okay?
You know what,
when they march me off to the Obama re-education camp, I'm going to go with my little hands in the air, don't shoot, got nothing here, you know, and I'm going to have 6 cartons of Camel Wide Blues strapped to my legs.
So I think what I'm hearing from you is that you're adopting the Molly Ivins approach, and we haven't been really talking that much about it. I believe that...
Well, no, it's not just that, Richard. It's that, you know, for heaven's sakes, this is a country that descended into fascism a hell of a long time ago.
Oh, absolutely.
But this country has this notion that it can't possibly be fascist if it doesn't have snappy black uniforms with double lightning bolts on it.
True, true. You know, quite a while ago, when I was living in Oakland, I was riding on a bus through Berkeley, past the UC Berkeley campus, and on the roof of a building, I noticed one of these fences with barbed wire on the top.
Razor wire, you mean?
Huh?
The rolled stuff, the razor wire?
Well, at this time, I don't think they had razor wire yet, and it was barbed wire. And you know how it can be slanted in one direction or another at the top of a fence. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah. Generally toward the inside of the fence, because that makes it harder to climb over and out.
Yeah, well, that's it. It was pointed inside as if it could be used as a holding pin. And Berkeley has a park that has bocce ball lanes in it. It's in a different part of town, and I saw the same thing. Holy mackerel! You know, they're planning to pen up people. You know, maybe demonstrators. Whatever, all of a sudden it's like I got the police state heebie-jeebies. And this sort of thing's been on my mind for a long time.
And I'm glad it is. you know, the cost of freedom is eternal vigilance.
Yes, exactly.
But we sort of pissed away that whole eternal vigilance thing a generation ago. Two generations ago.
Maybe two generations, yeah.
Because, you know, wasn't it convenient that the communist witch hunt came precisely at the same time that the United States federal government was giving birth to the national security state? Wasn't that convenient?
See,
because guess what? The national security state was birthed by a combination between a bunch of goddamn Yaleys and Nazis who'd gotten a pass.
I'm blanking on it. Give me some background.
Well, the national security state comes to fruition in the days following the end of the Second World War, when the OSS is transformed into the CIA with the help of the Dulles boys. And in the meantime, we've got a bunch of Nazi creeps who have been quietly allowed into the United States because, well, you know, better that we should get them than that the Soviets should, right?
Yep.
And the national security state comes in with the advent of the bomb, and it's total, and that's also the same time as the birth of consumer culture, the birth of the Cold War, and we have a communist witch hunt at the same time to make sure that anybody who complains about that gets run off into the weeds, and boom, you've got fascism marching forward from that day to this, and nobody dare say the word fascism.
Yeah, I know that boogeyman.
I mean, I won't sit and fight with people, Richard, over the notion that there's problems with the National Defense Authorization Act. I won't. Really, I won't. But to sit and pretend that it all happened because Barack Obama wanted it to? No, sorry. I know just a little bit too much history to be able to take that drink of pablum and not know it for the chalky shit that it is. Make any sense at all?
It does. It does. But what do you think the significance is of codifying this into law? You know, the arrest part of it, the indefinite detention.
How can I put this? It didn't need to be. It already existed. This was just a little right-wing muscle flexing by the Republicans in the House and the Senate and chicken shit Democrats too scared not to go along with it. Okay? They deboned habeas corpus back during the Bush administration. I know because I remember throwing a fit about it.
I remember you doing that. What exactly is the manifestation of habeas corpus?
How do you mean?
Well, how does habeas corpus exactly protect us in the flesh, in the real world?
Habeas corpus is a simple Latin phrase saying, why do you have the body? It is enshrined in the Magna Carta as a means by which the prince may not simply say, go get him and throw him in the Tower of London until he dies. He's annoying me.
Now, the body means what?
The body of the person who is in prison.
Okay.
You know, in the days of Henry II, before his idiot son John screwed up the idea of kingship to the point that the barons rebelled and forced him to sign the Magna Carta, it is said, and perhaps apocryphally so, that one day at dinner, Henry, who was having a terrible squabble with his former best friend, Thomas à Becket, who he deliberately elevated to the position of Archbishop of Canterbury because he hoped to control the Catholic Church in England. One day at dinner, after he had already after this feud with Thomas had opened, and Thomas was feuding with him, and Thomas had run to France, and Thomas had come back, and blah 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 blah. One day at dinner, amongst the barons, Henry, in what was probably a wine and or beer sodden fit, said, "Will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest?" And the next thing Thomas à Becket knew, he was sprouting daggers. Well, by the time John comes along, the barons are fed up with John because John has gone beyond just, you know, an archbishop now and again. And John starts throwing people in prison willy-nilly. And the barons were fit to slit his throat. And they said, "John, we can either chop your head off with that there axe, or you can sign that there paper." And the paper that he signed was called the Magna Carta. And it's got a bunch of stuff in it about how one treats debts to Jews and things like that. But one of the things that's in it is habeas corpus. And habeas corpus says that you can't just throw somebody in prison because you don't like them. And that if you do that, the courts will, the person will have recourse to ask the courts to make you tell them why you're in prison. And so in the great big scary war on terror, we decided that habeas corpus was no longer convenient, even though it had been previously enshrined in the Constitution of the United States. And so habeas corpus got gutted during the W administration, and indefinite detention of American citizens became a reality then. And a lot of progressives and a lot of liberals back then were going, "Holy crap, this is wrong." But there's a lot of progressives and liberals out there who, when the National Defense Authorization Act was passed, and, you know, I'll submit to you that Glenn Greenwald, for instance, is no liberal, is no progressive, had a big stinking hissy because it had been recodified. They'd said it again. Only this time, they said it again with that Negro in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And there are still people pissing themselves over it.
Yeah, and he signed it.
Because you know what would have happened if he hadn't signed it, Richard?
What? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sergeants and privates wouldn't have gotten paid.
Oh, okay.
That's what I meant about the sausage-making business.
Okay, so it was a bit of extortion on there.
Sure it was. It was nothing but pure stinking electioneering politics.
I didn't know that part of it.
So, yeah, I mean, it's fascinating that you asked a question about Jacques Desmoulins, because this is, after all, Friday the 13th.
Yes.
Do you know how Friday the 13th became bad luck?
Not at all.
Because Jacques Desmoulins was burned at the stake on Friday the 13th.
Hey, I got a question for you. This is a whole different thing. How's my sound?
Oh, no, you sound great.
You know, I'll tell you the reason why I'm asking. This is a funny story. And one of the reasons I haven't called in so long is that my telephone line has been incredibly screwed up.
You mentioned that in our last call.
I did. You got quite a memory. Well, you know, AT&T has been out here 10 times in the last 3 months. My phone has been unusable at night, especially when the weather was cold. It's quite cold here now, by the way. I'm going to have the heat on a bit tonight. And this is California. You know?
Yeah, but it ain't all orange groves, and at least I know that.
Yeah, but the thing is, I hate heat. You know, and where I live, I can see the Golden Gate Bridge. It's across the other side of the whole bay. And there's a spit of fog that comes, like, directly over to where I live.
Okay, this is the part of the conversation we call rubbing it in.
No, I'm not. It saves my ass because I'm really...
No. There's this spit of fog that I can see coming across the golden... the bay.
Yeah.
No, that's rubbing it in. That's, "Hey, Bob, you hillbilly."
No, hey! No, people, you know, sometimes you wax about maybe coming to live here in California, and I don't want you to. We need you in West Virginia.
Oh, so you're mobilizing the neighborhood associations, are you?
Well, I'll tell you, to me it's a godsend to know that there are people, you know, people like me stuck away in the red states here and there, and you know, that's a wonderful thing. So I want
I understand
mobilizing the hillbillies. That's really cool. You know, and then Jim will call in and I'll say, "Hey, there's more than one."
Yeah, there's an old joke whose punchline goes, "Run back, run away. There's two of them." I'm not going to tell it.
It's good. So you see, I call up AT&T and they send a guy. This is just insane. And of course, I have to deal with AT&T, right? They're my telephone. They're my internet. You know, what's my choice? Well, I can have AT&T, or I can have what's his face?
Welcome to Hobson's Choice.
Yeah, I can have Tweedledum or Tweedledee, right? And there's something
you can have the horse by the door,
or no horse at all,
or no horse at all.
Yeah. And so what's really going on here is that all the lines are falling apart. AT&T wants to sell everybody on a direct cable service with all kinds of bundled stuff, or not direct cable. It's direct fiber to the house. And my internet provider happens to be an independent at Santa Rosa, California, whose service is just, you know, extremely good. But AT&T actually owns the wires.
Well, they've got to go. The ones that are extremely, they got to go.
Yeah. So what's happening is AT&T here and there are putting fiber optics directly into apartment houses. And I was talking with my internet provider, you know, and they say, well, Jesus, when they do that, we're locked out. So that's what's going on. And so I keep calling them up, and they send over somebody else, you know, who is dispatched by computer. So I get on the phone, I call 611 Repair Service. And by the way, I have worked at 611 Repair Service. I have done many things in my life to try to avoid being a musician, just like my father did many things to try to avoid being an artist. Because let's face it, being an artist in this society is not the easiest thing to do.
Are you suggesting that it's a thankless job?
Oh yeah. so you know, part one of the hats.
That brush stroke went the wrong way, or you flatted when you should have sharped.
Yeah, right.
Ain't no winning.
Yeah, there have been two conductors I know. I remember in the U.S. If you played one wrong note in a rehearsal, you're out of a job. So,
well, you know, James Brown was like that.
Was he?
Oh, well, hey, I tell you what, as a musician, if you really want a big laugh, who was the great, 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 great jazz drummer? Buddy Rich.
Okay.
Get on YouTube and look up Buddy Rich Loses His Temper or Buddy Rich Swearing. What you will hear is him blessing out his band on the bus at intermission or whatever. Let me see if I can find that real quick. I'll save you the trouble because it's a delight. Stand by. Because this is the internet, and if there's a couple of dirty words in it, we don't have to sweat yet. I'm sure Newton Leroy Gingrich will have one of those billions that he's given a goddamn gun to come after us, but not yet.
Are you going to put this on?
Oh yeah, stand by.
Okay.
Yeah, there it is. All you have to do is type LO and you get Buddy Rich Loses It. Don't tell me they've disappeared this. Okay, let's try a different word. Buddy Rich Temper.
You may have to describe it.
Oh, here it is. No, this is easy. Here we go.
What the fuck do you think is going on here? You had too many fucking days off and you think this is a game. You think I'm the only one that's going to work out there? Well, you motherfuckers sit out there and clam all over this fucking joint. What do you think this is, anyhow? What kind of plane do you think this is? What kind of miscues do you call this? What fucking bear do you think you're playing on, motherfuckers? You want to fuck with me on the bandstand? Shut that fucking door.
I'm up there working my balls off trying to do somebody a favor, and you motherfuckers are sucking all over this joint. What kind of trumpet section do you call us tonight? And saxophones? You've got to fucking be kidding me. How dare you call yourselves professional? Assholes are playing like fucking children up there.
Bear Bryant, Woody Hayes, could have taken lessons from Buddy Rich.
Oh, my God.
You know, just a bunch of touring session guys, but no, he was not happy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a thankless job, right?
Yeah.
But I do love the word, you people out there throwing clams all over the place.
No, there were orchestral musicians who were in terror of George Sell. Or what's the guy who did the music for that Walt Disney film, The Sorcerer's Apprentice? Leopold Stokowski.
Stokowski, yeah. Leopold. Yeah, yeah. Leopold. You know where I first learned about Leopold?
Where?
Bugs Bunny. Just like opera. Because there's one where he gets in a fight with an opera singer, and at the end, he walks with his goofy white wig on down through the aisle. And everybody in the audience is going, Leopold, Leopold, Leopold. So a very young Bob Kincaid goes to the public library and wants to know who Leopold is. And, yeah, there you go.
So anyway...
God bless Chuck Jones. You know that?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I've done is technical writing, technical documentation. And I did a stint at 611 Repair Service. Working on a software project, I actually sat next to the operators who answered the phone when you called 611 and listened in on the conversations on the headset. And it was really, really fascinating because some of these people will really work their butts off to make sure the customer gets what they need. And they'll do that in violation of company policies. Because these people who work for the phone company are clocked every damn second that they're on the job. There's computers monitoring them.
Every second, every instant, yes.
Every instant, you know, and they get a report every day with percentages. How many, and I'm talking more well over 10 years ago, you know, they'd get a report at the end of every day. You spent so much percent typing versus so much percent talking with the customer.
Well, that's what happens when you let the statisticians take over the business.
Really? Exactly. And it's fearsome. You know, one of the guys came over here and he said he's clocked while he's driving. He says they even monitor the speed that he's driving on the freeway. And, you know, so, but they're so stupid and inefficient in the way they work. Because, you know, I dial 611. I'm here in California. Well, the phone may be answered in Cleveland or in Texas or in Chicago.
Oh, that's why I learned early on. Where are you?
Exactly. I do the same thing. Where am I, you know, where are you at? And then they get on, you know, they get on the computer, and the guy who comes over, like there's a home territory, there's a yard where the people get dispatched from that takes care of my street. But the person who gets assigned may be driving out here from Berkeley, or El Sobrante, or even Oakland, which is not right nearby. And I've seen like two guys working on the same line dispatched out of two different places, and neither one of them knew that the other guy had been.
The left hand had no idea what the exact.
Yeah. And, oh, and it's so funny. And they're all going on a pilgrimage two blocks away.
Yeah, and 3 months later, the company's in front of the Public Service Commission saying, well, you know, we need a rate increase.
Yes, Bob, that's correct. You know, every project I have worked on for the phone company has gone up in smoke.
Well, look, and you know, let's expand this to the world of say electrical power generation.
Yeah.
Appalachian Power, who happens to be our power company, seems to have terribly, terribly hard times keeping power lines on poles. Of course, you could make the argument that maybe they should have been burying them a generation ago, but you know,
well, that brings certain problems.
But they get caught. For instance, when coal went to its highest, thermal coal went to its highest price ever, the geniuses at Appalachian Power said, "You know what we need to do? Buy a lot of it at the highest price we can possibly get." And so they did. And then we had two mild winters, and they're sitting on a bunch of expensive coal that they can't even burn. And they go to the Public Service Commission and say, you know what? The chumps need to pay us some more money because we are some serious business dumbasses.
Really?
My power bill has gone up something like 200% in 5 years.
That's unconscionable, considering what...
Meanwhile, the friends of coal, Richard, you know what? I know them tree huggers love their wind and solar, and that'd be great, but you know what? It don't work right now.
Yeah, really. Well, I was sitting next to this woman, and, you know, I had the headphone on, and she got a call from somebody with a Filipino accent. And she said, Tagalog, and the person said, yes. She said, one moment. And she called up a friend of hers, you know, on the job.
And conferenced it?
Yes, about 400 miles away, and said, hey, would you translate? The guy says, sure, you know. And it was wonderful. Three-way conversation, you know, between the customer and the operator and her buddy up in Ukiah. They got everything all squared away for the customer. The call was finished, and she turned to me, and she said, you know,
I'm going to get fired.
Yeah, well, she said, I wasn't supposed to do that. I said, what do you mean? She said, I'm supposed to use our official translation service, and you know what? They only do Spanish.
Jesus. Excuse me. That's. Are you speaking Russian? Yeah. Let me get my Spanish speaker online. Jesus.
And you know, it's like, and I watched this. I listened to this, and I was stunned because even that time that she spent to tell me what had just happened, she was
monitored.
Clocked.
Yeah.
Huh?
Was monitored.
Yeah, she was being clocked for dead time. You know, it's just. I got fired from that job, by the way.
No, I knew we were getting to that point.
Oh, well, I was cracking jokes because...
There are some places that you have no business not getting fired, Richard. And I have a sneaking suspicion that look, you, as you say, you spent a lifetime trying not to be a musician. Your dad spent a lifetime trying not to be an artist. There are far too many people in the United States of America who don't spend a lifetime trying not to be the things they wind up being. Because of that old adage about people living lives in quiet desperation.
Well, it is. It's like that. I have, I'll tell you, the one thing that I've never been able to withstand. See, I was a consultant, which is what kept me sane. So I worked for technical agencies all the time I was doing this work, for the simple reason that I could not marry the company. Every company I have worked for has been sick. It's been like a dysfunctional family, and each one has been dysfunctional.
I worked for a giant corporation once,
that was
CNN.
That was CNN, yeah.
And never again. And if, you know, we sit here and we sweat to make everything go from month to month,
yeah.
And sometimes I have to explain to my children why things work the way we do.
Yeah.
And I say, but you know what? Nobody... I don't have a boss. And you can't measure that in troy ounces.
It's true. I'll tell you...
And we're not talking about, you know, when we fundraise for the program, we're talking about the things that keep the program on the air. We're not talking about my lavish lifestyle and the Ferrari in the yard or the $50 million, the $50 million a year. I'm happy back here. This has been a magnificent Friday on the front porch, Richard, including our conversation. I wish this could go on for another 3 hours. I really do.
We gotta let some other people.
Well, yeah, we do, and I've got a couple of blinking lights I want to hit. So
let me finish this part of it, okay? I just want to say, yeah, I know you still have holes in your roof, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and I don't own this house that I rent, so we've paid prices for this kind of independence.
Well, and you know, you've read To Kill a Mockingbird, right?
No, actually I haven't.
Oh, Jesus, Richard, will you please go do that this weekend?
Okay.
Because there's this one passage where Jem has to go and read to this cranky, hateful old woman until she dies. And Atticus explains to him when it's all over that the reason she was so hateful was that she was bad sick, and that she dealt with her pain with morphine. but she had determined, she knew she was an addict, and she knew that before she died, she wanted to kick it. And that she, because she said she wanted to die a free woman.
Yes. Yes. And what is freedom? What, you know?
Well, you know, it's a fluid definition that includes having nothing left to lose. But there's also that thing, and I think it speaks to a lot of people in the Horn family, of not being, not being forced to do things with which we profoundly and morally and ethically disagree.
You know, Bob, let me tell you, let me continue on this track. I think you'll be interested. You know, I've worked for a number of high-tech companies and large corporations, and every one of them is a dysfunctional family, and each one is dysfunctional in its own way. So each corporation is sick with a different disease. And it's like you walk in the door, and this company, the woman is beating the husband. And this other company, the husband is beating the wife. And the third one, the children.
They're both beating the children, yeah.
Yeah, it's like every single one of these outfits is sick. And they can't even, you know, they're wasting so much money because of this illness in the corporate. You know, it's like they can't even...
But you know, the key to that is also the key is also part of addiction behavior as well, because
yeah,
you're talking about corporations that don't refuse to deal with the fact that they're sick, and they're sick
right.
Because they're corporations.
Oh yeah, well you know it.
We just got a
small private business where the owner is a lunatic. You know, I mean, but.
But he can't hurt as many people as a corporation can.
Correct.
We just got an email in from your not-too-distant neighbor, Andy.
Yeah, I know Andy. Yeah.
And he said, concerning AT&T, the boys from Brazil, is he talking about the AT&T that funds ALEC and gave $100,000 to the Heartland Institute and also provides me with local phone service and Internet connectivity? In less than 2 years, AT&T has jacked up my cost of service 34.1%. A competitive market? No. You can switch carriers, but you'll have to pay new installation charges of roughly $200 and take the chance your new carrier is not a fly-by-night shyster and can actually deliver service and product.
Yeah.
AT&T has a big advantage in pre-built fixed infrastructure already paid for. In addition, during the Arnold Schwarzenegger regime, a deal was worked out to exempt AT&T from Public Utilities Commission oversight. There is no oversight of local AT&T pricing charges, not to mention Internet service. All of it exempt from regulatory scrutiny because we have a competitive market BS, even though their lines infringe on the public commons.
That's correct only in part. There are portions of the service which are regulated, and those are the ones I'm holding on to. And there's precious little of it. But let me get back to this corporation business. So...
I'm at 12 minutes till. We gotta break this here because I gotta hit these other blinking lights, Richard.
Okay, let me call back and continue on that.
All right, we'll keep at it. I'll be back hopefully Thursday, maybe Friday.
Good.
Take
okay.
care. See Find you. Out.
Bye.
Delightful conversation with our buddy Richard. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
And, hey, how you doing? Hey. Brother David from Maine, I don't have a cell phone either. Don't worry about that. I'm waiting for the glasses. That's what I'm waiting for.
The Google glasses, yes.
Yeah, dude, those are awesome. Those are excellent. I mean, that's practical to me. And then you don't have to always look like,
And you're not talking to your shoe?
Yeah, you get friends. I mean, I kind of have an unwritten rule, you know. You put those away when you come to my house. I don't want to see it. You know, because the more I see it...
I'll remember that.
You know, you spend it... Oh, hey, awesome. not for that, but for you. Hey, yeah, come on over. But,
well, yeah, it's looking better and better, you know.
Oh, well, that's exciting.
I'm only going to say two words to you. Chippewa Falls.
Hey, that's close. All right, I'll see you soon. We'll see you. We'll bring everybody. But no, you think about getting on one of them blockers. But back to the National Defense Authorization Act. You know, you're exactly right. Fascism's been here for a long time. It's been encroaching and encroaching and encroaching.
Oh, it quit encroaching a lot. It stopped encroaching in 1948. It marched right in. You know, it was long about the same time that one dude's writing, when fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in a flag and carrying a cross, or a Bible, or whatever the quote is.
Well, the mycelium, the root of that infection, keeps spreading. But Glenn Greenwald or not, you know, there's a couple things that Obama did regarding that NDAA that, you know, I'm kind of thankful he did. And you know what? A guy like, what's his face? You know, I don't want to hear that. You know, I mean, that's really this guy's patriotism, his citizenship. He didn't give a crap about his citizenship. He's over there in friggin' Yemen talking about bombing this and putting this together and that together. And you know what? If you're in that kind of zone, fighting against us, doing that, how are you going to cry when you get a cruise missile up your rear end? I don't even understand that. That doesn't make any sense to me. That would have been like crying about being in Nagasaki or Hiroshima during, I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, isn't that equivalent to what that guy was doing? I mean, and you all know how I feel about the war, and you know how I feel, but the fact of the matter is we're still in war. You may not believe in it or support it or what have you, but, you know, you're in the wrong place at the wrong time saying the wrong things. Cops in this country could shoot you for a hell of a lot less than what that guy was doing. So, you know, and that's kind of one of those things that I believe President Obama reserved the right, and he kind of shifted the rules that, you know, outside of the United States of America, if you're captured by, you know, U.S. military forces or intelligence officers, then you
can... Yeah, I'm disinclined to defend a whole bunch of that. I don't like the idea of, because, you know, Jim wrote in a little bit ago and said the oubliette, and that's a French verb. He said the oubliette is derived from the French verb oublier, meaning to forget the person so imprisoned, as in letters de cachet by French monarchs and so forth. You know, the English had star chamber. And you know, one of the things that come, you know, even if we don't call it state fascism, we can call it statism, and you can get disappeared. And eventually, I mean, let's be clear with things on the road that they're on, Brother Albert. We're going to get there. We're going to get there. It might not be, you know, tomorrow or the next day. It might be, you know, when, say, you know, Ferg is a 65-year-old man. We're going to get there. You know, when you can just be randomly disappeared. But the thing is, the chance to save this republic passed a hell of a long time ago. And the question is, how bad do you want it to get, how quick? And I guess I'm being super negative here.
Yeah, a little bit.
What I'm getting at is, you can get, you know, we got there a lot faster. We made a lot more fascist progress under George W. Bush than we've made under Barack Hussein Obama.
Yes,
and that's the absolute truth. He is not another Bush. He is not worse than Bush.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. No, he's not Magic Mittens. He's not any of that. He's not Newton. He's not any of those.
But I really honestly, desperately right. need for him not to bomb Iran.
I don't think he is.
I want to hope he's not.
Nah, if they would have, they would have already. Why not? But there's no evidence.
No, there's no compelling evidence. Argument for what you just said. Yeah, because it's only going to get harder the longer, and that's the argument the Israelis make. You know, it's only going to get harder the longer we wait.
Yeah, but not harder. For
but somewhere along the think. Somewhere along the way, doesn't there have to be some modicum of proof?
Absolutely. That's why the Israelis haven't done it. That's why they're trying to pull another, you know, 2003.
Because they can't prove it.
It's not going to happen. No, and honestly, the as the years go on, you know, yeah, you can lament about AT&T and this and that, but as a matter of fact, you got fiber optic in your house. And eventually all monopolies get broken down. We don't tolerate them for all too long anymore. You know, so, yeah, we can sit there and talk about, you know, losing civil liberties and doing this and doing that, but it's not for like it used to be. During the Magna Carta, what was it? It was what? Hundreds and hundreds of years, centuries, millennia. of dictators and so on and so forth as we hopped away from more egalitarian.
Yeah, because the Magna Carta certainly did not end all the problems with the monarchy in England. No.
It was just a good idea, and it was a seed. And, you know, we keep putting seeds out, you know? I mean, we talk about it all the time. And, you know, solar has the most investment in terms of energy, you know, for 2011. And, you know, you sit there and you look at places. I was watching PBS Nova the other night, and they're talking about these tornadoes. And, oh, my God, holy cow.
Yeah, I think that was when they were rerunning Lawrence Welk here on my PBS, Albert.
Well, of course, because they don't, you know, it's like you sit there and you look at this, and you're like, all right, well, what do you need to stop doing? You need to stop, A, building timber frame homes and living in a trailer. And you go, all right, well, trailer, you know, but how expensive is it if you own the piece of little land, the lot underneath your feet, you own that dirt, make some cobs, radically simple. It's an excellent documentary. Go look for it. Go find it. It's about cob homes. A cob home will withstand a tornado. You could have a little thing underneath, and it would cost you not even nothing to run, because it's all, you know, solar thermal energy and, you know, insulation, you know, to the max. You got, what, 2-foot walls there? You know, you can build them in, you know, almost no time. You can put anything you want, coaxial cables and, you know, any kind of thing regarding conduit. You know, you could put all that stuff up there, boom, 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 and you'd be protected a little bit when an E5 comes over your head. You know, don't rebuild the same crap. Don't buy another trailer. You know, these are the things that we need to start, you know, doing as a civilization. We got solar, we got all these things, and I don't think we're going to see people with their civil rights just letting them go. It's all about us. If we allow that, you know, if we go, okay, well, then, you know what's going to happen. But we don't allow it. We come out, we do make a roar. You know, we do get things like SOPA failed. We get things like Keystone, you know, modified.
Yeah, and there's a new thing to be aware of. I don't know if you know this or not, but
there's always a new. What's the new one?
The new one, and we got to get out of here real quick. Right. Now there's a war on embedding. Really?
Well,
the Congress has noticed that people can embed stuff in websites, and the NRA. RIAA and the MPAA, et cetera, have decided that that is really, really scary. And so and apparently there's just basically what I read is that there's a move afoot to do something about embedding.
Good luck.
Because there are really bad, evil, nasty, scary websites that provide embedded codes. They don't have any actual stuff on their website, but they embed things.
True.
And Ars Technica is that website. Ars Technica is kind of taking the lead on it. A lawsuit by the Motion Picture Association of America that argues that just putting an embed code on your website is a violation of copyright.
Yeah, okay. Good luck. It's not going to work. It just isn't.
Well, no, exactly, because it's the whole mousetrap, mouse, burglar, lock, locksmith.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, excellent TED Talk regarding the $10 billion, the thing called iTunes. What is that little thing called? The iPod.
Oh,
$10 billion iPod. TED Talk.
Yeah, okay, look it up. We got to get out of here, Albert. I'm glad we got to talk.
All right, Brother Bob.
Take care.
For the weekend, I'm going to have rain and everything else, but you take care, Brother Bob.
I'm going to be on the road. I'll talk to you soon, I hope. On Wisconsin.
Bye.
Or on to Wisconsin, hopefully. Hey, thanks, everybody. I wish this Friday on the Front Porch hadn't ended. This has been a bunch of fun. Rick Smith is next. Thanks to everybody who makes this happen. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, always, always.